Some of what you are about to hear might be deemed offensive by some people. If you are insulted by people arguing about the New England Patriots and pretty much anything else, or by subjects like soap with a slot, gutter cleaners, people with big heads, Bilpolian, Egypt, wedge salads, and drilling for oil, you probably shouldn't listen to PFW in Progress. But if you do listen and hear something questionable, please do not be offended. We're just trying to entertain. In other words, some of the content of PFW in Progress may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
The following takes place between 12 p.m. and 2 p.m.
This is PFW in Progress.
Who's got the wiener schnitzel? Let's see, next we got roast beef au jus. Who's got the roast beef au jus? Last but not least, footlong. Who's got the footlong?
PFW in Progress.
Okay, gang, you know the rules. No humping, no pushing, no sniffing hiding.
With Red Kirsch.
Wool. Host annual host, host
annual
an annual
annual,
annual meeting of t-
the
inner
the big one International Preservation Society tomorrow night.
Paul Perillo.
Hey, I guess they're right. Senior citizens, although slow and dangerous behind the wheel, can still serve a purpose.
Don't you go dying on me.
And Andy. And Andy?
Nice set of Hooters you got there.
I beg your pardon?
The owls. They're beautiful.
Andy Hart.
Must have been following us for weeks.
What do you say?
How the hell did they know that I got gas?
Eric Scalavino.
I can't feel my big fingers anymore. They're numb.
Maybe you should wear these extra gloves. My hands are starting to get sweaty.
Extra gloves? You've had this pair of extra gloves this whole time?
Yeah. We're in the Rockies.
For now, anyway.
So you're telling me there's a chance?
Yeah! PFW in Progress.
You fellas been doing a bit of boozing, have you? Sucking back on Grandpa's old cough medicine?
Part of the Patriots Football Network.
Want to hear the most annoying sound in the world?
Guys! Guys!
Fellas, think we could listen to the radio or something?
Eric Scalavino is not in the house today, so we will not hear the most annoying noise in the world, which is, of course, his voice. But the A-team is in town. Andy Hart here, joined by Paul Perillo. PFW in Progress, Tuesday, August 25th, third week of training camp or preseason, Paul. And as you know, that's the ever-important third week.
Most important. That's a big one.
Big topic this week here at Gillette Stadium. Patriots have obviously transitioned out of training camp mode and into a regular season-type practice schedule, one-a-days, and some preparation for the Washington Redskins, who they'll face Friday night at FedEx Field in I was going to say Washington, but it's not.
Landover, Maryland.
We'll discuss that game here today. We'll discuss some interesting new contract-related stories over the last couple days, Paul Perillo.
Yeah.
One being Nick Cashier signed an extension with the team, a very uniquely creative kind of extension, essentially a three-year extension, adding on to this year, his final year. He was going to be one of those free agents on the long list of the Patriots have next spring, but he signs a deal, kind of tweaked his contract, got a roster bonus for next spring, essentially guaranteeing some of his money from this year, lowering his cap number by about $700,000 from essentially $2.5 million down into the $1.7 range-ish, somewhere there. But a much bigger issue, pun intended, Vince Wilfork. Caught wind, I think, of the Nick Cashier contract extension. Had some interesting comments in the locker room on Sunday discussing sort of a frustration, a fact that there's been no advancement on his seeking out a contract extension. What did you make of, A, the timing of the two deals and kind of them all coming out, Cashier talking about his at one end of the locker room, Wilfork on the other, talking about how there's been no advancement, and what does it mean in the larger picture?
Well, I mean, I think it's pretty easy for us to logically step back and say, really, Vince, there's no comparison between Nick Cashier's situation and Vince Wilfork's situation, and really the two have nothing to do with each other. Obviously, if Wilfork wanted or would be willing to take a similar type deal that Cashier just signed, I think that the Patriots would say, fine, let's get it done yesterday. But when we're dealing with a totally different sort of structure and dollar value.
If you were willing to take double the Cashier contract, I think they would still do it.
However, not to completely throw Vince under the bus, because I don't want to do that, I can understand his point of view. He is being told on one side that the labor, unrest and whatever the uncertainty going forward, is sort of, I think the way that Mr. Kraft said it was, kind of, we don't want to put ourselves in a box. We don't know what the parameters are going to be once and if and when that new CBA is put into place. So we don't want to do things that are going to tie us up. And then the next minute after Vince hears that, he's seeing one of his teammates sign an extension. So I can understand Vince's frustration. However, as we already pointed out, the dollar values are so different that I really don't even think it's worth comparing the two. Bringing the two up in the same sentence is really worthless because it's apples and oranges.
Which is why Vince brought up in his sentences guys like Eli Manning getting $90-plus million, mm-hmm. And most recently one that he didn't even have a chance to bring up, Philip Rivers got a $90-quote-million extension from the Chargers. And it's interesting, Tom Brady just held a press conference here at Gillette Stadium, was sort of asked in general terms his thoughts as he'll be coming up in another year on this discussion of contract extension and is obviously an elite quarterback, was asked about what he thought of all the long-term, very lucrative extensions out there. And I thought it was interesting. He said it shows the strength of the league. And I thought, especially in this landscape of CBA negotiations, uncapped years, lockouts, all that, it was interesting how he worded it, strength of the league, showing that there's still plenty of money out there to spend on the players if owners choose to and decide to spend it on them, which I think kind of aligns him indirectly with Will Fork, but also in a larger sense aligns him in this landscape, aligns him very much, I'm a player, and I'm voicing and looking out for the best interests of the players, so...
And I
thought
do
that
think,
was notable.
I think it's very notable. I think you're absolutely right, Andy, because I think Brady has been a guy who, for the most part, has been really team-oriented, not just in his actions. We all know his actions are team-oriented, but in his words in terms of off-field stuff like this. Much has been made of the fact that when he signed his last contract, the six-year, $60 million deal, no one would argue that he didn't leave money on the table. I mean, he absolutely could have gotten more.
And that was a hot topic, if you remember, in was it Houston for the Super Bowl? It was discussed more openly than most topics are with his contract and leaving money on the table and the idea of leaving money to be spent elsewhere and the concept of team
exactly.
and salary cap and all that.
And I think that
this
is a little bit
like
of a,
that.
Yeah, this is a little bit of a departure. These words, as you mentioned, some of the bullet points, and I'm going to let Andy speak more intelligently on that because I was not in on the Brady interview. I was in the locker room. Well,
plus I'm more intelligent.
Well, that's certainly a ridiculous, absolutely ridiculous statement. But I think he put the how strong the league was, and how much money they're making, the 90 all the millions and billions of dollars globally that the league is bringing in, and it's a good sign. And I think he was very pro player in his comments today, and I think that. Not that he hasn't been pro-teammate, because I think he very much is, but I think he has been a guy who has been willing to play the game in terms of being the team guy and then hoping that that money that gets spread around then gets used elsewhere. But I think the salary cap now, Andy, is getting so big every year that players even that want to have that mentality are having a hard time doing it.
Yes, I agree. And I also thought it was interesting, Brady – made some comments again. Somebody kind of tried to bring it back about his contract, and he was clearly saying, "I'm focused on this year. That's all. My teammates are focused on. I'm focused on this year." And someone said, "If they came to you, does that mean you wouldn't be open to listening?" And he kind of poo-pooed that, but he did say he learned from last year that it can be taken away from you at any time, and you need to focus on the current week, the current day, the current game, and all that. And I also thought, if you want to read between the lines and kind of use that in light of the Vince Wilfork things, Vince has done everything that's been contractually obligated for him to do. You would look at it maybe as, yeah, it can be taken away like that with a snap of a finger. Maybe he needs to really start thinking more about the money than say what he said, in which is, my teammates can count on me. They know who I am. They know what they're going to get out of me. That's nice. And that in an ideal world, that's tremendous.
Yeah.
But we know sometimes those perfect little stories don't end so well for guys that stick to their ideals.
Yeah, I feel for Vince really a lot in this situation because
nice guys finish last. It's the old saying.
Yeah, and you can see it. You can see how much it means to him. Football means a lot to him, and not only football, Andy, but Patriots football. Mm-hmm. And the fact that he wants to stay here, I think, is really hurting him from the personal side. His negotiation leverage side is really getting damaged, and it's really unfortunate. By that, you know, it's the guys, and you look at it, everybody says, well, geez, why doesn't he walk out? Why didn't he skip minicamp? Or you know, I heard there was a local radio station today that said he made a big mistake by coming to minicamp. And I just can't bring myself to say a player is in the wrong for going out and playing and doing what he's supposed to do and what he's under contract for. So I do feel for Vince Wilfork in this situation. An interesting fact, I'm not sure that a lot of our listeners will know, Andy, I know you do.
I doubt it.
The rookie class, first round class of 2004, with Philip Rivers signing yesterday, there's only two members of those 32 first round picks that are still under their rookie contracts, and I think we know who they are because they're both wearing the Flying Elvis. Ben Watson and Vince Wilfork. And that's,
but see,
that's
I
not
think it's funny
chance.
They're on opposite ends of the spectrum. One is underpaid and is probably in the NFL landscape should make a lot more. The other's lucky to still be playing under his rookie contract,
right?
Because he hasn't contributed enough to the team.
So you can understand Wilfork's frustration, and the team at the same time, look, that they operate a little bit differently. And this is where I sort of cut ties with Wilfork. A lot of the stuff that he was talking about on Sunday was about specifically, other teams have been able to do this, and you mentioned all the quarterbacks and also Albert Haynesworth and Terrell Suggs, the two defensive players that signed long-term lucrative
deals.
Extensions. That's great, Vince, but you know what? The Patriots aren't other teams, and you like the fact that Patriots aren't other teams from the football side and everything else. The Patriots are a little bit different than everybody else, and you know what? They win a little bit more than everybody else, too. So you got to kind of take the good with the bad, and it's a tough situation. It's a complex one, and I can understand both sides.
It is, and that topic will continue to be on the table the rest of the show. If you want to send in your emails on Wilfork, his future, his contract, the Kazier contract, and as I said, the guy I think that's kind of forgotten in all this is Logan Mankins, another elite-level player, pro bowler, who is due to become a free agent next year, has said, like Wilfork, there's been no real advancement on any talks of a contract extension. In fact, you said you'd have to ask Bill about that, which I thought was a little bit interesting and kind of pinpointing, making it personal that Bill Belichick is the guy in this organization that you ask about in terms of contracts. And I think we've all known that, but it's not often brought up, you know, in particulars by the player in these discussions. All those topics on the table, as is pending roster cuts, Paul Perillo. By this time next week or around this time next week, cuts could be made. The first set of cuts, September 1. Paul Perillo was working on his 53-man roster projection for the upcoming issue of Patriots Football
Weekly.
It never
gets any easier, Andy.
It shouldn't be.
No, I know. But, you know, you figure when you have a really good team, you know, I don't know.
It is what it is.
It is what it is.
I think that people, and we talked about this a little off the air, too. I think the general perception I think people have is there are more people that the fans think are locks than I think are truly locks. I think there's an argument to be made for a lot of guys to get cut. A lot of different guys. I think the team could go in so many different directions that you don't realize. I think there's a handful, a nucleus of about 10 or 12 guys, maybe 15, that are truly locks.
It's like I told you when I did my ranking the roster for the commentary. I did the first 10, and then I did like the bottom 20, 25 for easy cuts on the 80-man roster. Then in the middle, I couldn't tell you the big difference between 17 and 42.
I mean, you looked at, you know, some of the spots, and I'm not going to get into all the details because I want people to
buy the paper.
To buy
subscribe,
the paper,
1-800-494-PATS.
But some of the discussions that Andy and I had, and we actually let Eric into these conversations. Usually
offers very little.
These are high-powered meetings, so we usually try to eliminate Eric from that. But Andy and I were talking about some of the positional breakdowns, and depending on where you put different guys may really affect, you know Brandon McGowan, Tank Williams, Vinny Churchill, Rob Ninkovich, Sean Crable, you know, guys that are all different, you know, Terrence Wheatley, guys that are in all different stages of their career. Some are old, some are young, some are veterans with resumes, strong resumes elsewhere learning. Some guys are hurt, some guys haven't been able to get on the field. And depending on how you want to break it all down, then you have to go into the guys that generally just offer you special teams help. Matthew Slater, Ray Ventrone, guys like that. and you have to try to weigh it. It's such a numbers game. You have to, and I think Bill can go a variety of different ways. But it's a lot of fun, and we're looking forward to that. That'll be in the next issue. We're looking forward to that one.
Not as much fun as Doc is having right now on his computer screen.
What's he got, a little porn going on?
Yeah. Some hot babe in
Read your email.
Bikini. I tried. Things are changing in front of me. I don't like this. It's things that were new are no longer new. Things are moving. But I do have breaking news. Not sure who this is from. The ratings poll from last night's TV viewing are in. And Sports Tonight on Comcast reportedly did very well, winning its time period and extremely popular with the 18 to 54-year-old female audience. Word is the females tuned in to see Mr. Andy Hart.
Well, those numbers are going to get blown out of the water tonight, then.
At 10?
Sure.
Paul Perillo will be on, so those 54 to 96 female demographic will really be clicking in at a furious pace and turning up the volume.
Mrs. Doc will be watching.
Mrs. Doc. Mama Doc. Webradio@patriots.com. Webradio@patriots.com. 508-543-7482. If you want to call in and join the show, talk about one of the many topics we just threw out there earlier. Doc. Who was lunch from today? Oh, wait, I know. Forget it. I'm acting like Fred. Basil! Our good friend Basil got off the hook a little bit because it was a light order because Fred's not here, Eric's not here, Two Gender didn't steal a lunch today. So a light order, but
very much
I got to tell you,
yesterday
Basil wanted the order in early so he could make it and get it done. From the point at which I sent the email yesterday morning, yeah. I wanted my chicken parm calzone. I had to wait
over
24 hours.
It was tough to order a day in advance, I'll tell you.
I missed that, baby. It's been a while since I had the chicken parm calzone. But if you're in the area, head down to Pizzeria Sean Grandi, as Fred calls it. Most of us call it Pizzeria Grande. Great calzones. And if you tell them PFW sent you, I think they give you something. I don't know. Probably a free soda. A free Coke, even though we're a Pepsi team. Should I get right into the emails, aside from the obvious breaking news about last night's TV ratings?
Yeah, why don't you get into the
okay, emails. I like this one. Subject, 4 plus 4, 4v42. Is that spam? Yep, that's spam. Okay, next email. That was from bettersoccercoaching.com. Will Fork in his future?
Yo, hold on a second.
Oh, for Christ's
sake. You
sakes.
Know, before we started the show, Andy, I asked Andy if he would be so kind as to sit in and read the emails, and he agreed. And he told me that
I'm reading them. What do you want?
He told me that what he would do was he would break a dish. You know, a clear reference to, you know, when your wife asks you to do the dishes, you make sure you break one so you don't get asked to do it again. In my parlance, as the listeners know, is cutting the hedges crooked so my father would never ask me to do that again. It never worked for me. So Andy said that that's what he would be doing. I'll be breaking a dish. Sure enough, the first email out of the chute, you broke a dish.
Next up, we have Add 3 inches immediately. Oh, wait, that's probably another spam one, huh, Paul? No, we have
no,
Todd in Jacksonville.
That's your personal box.
That's no. What she said.
Yeah. Hey, fellas, this is Todd in Jacksonville. Do you think the drafting and recent play of Brace has had or will have an effect on Will Fork's extension? I believe that if Brace shows that he is capable of plugging the middle of the D, we will watch Will Fork's last season as a Pat and contract extension for Seymour. Thoughts? He also was the one who sent in the potential hottest woman in the world. Yeah, she's hot, but in a dirty kind of way, kind of
Megan Fox type
strippers. No, in a strippers.
Oh.
First of all, this looks photoshopped. There's no way that her ribs are that skinny with breasts that large. But
she's hot though.
She's hot, but not in a natural beauty kind of way at all.
Okay, now Andy is certain.
I
know what you're
big,
talking about.
Natural, beautiful. I want her to be able to throw her hair in a ponytail on a Saturday afternoon. We'll go get coffee and she'll look hot. That girl, not hot on a Saturday morning. She's got needs 2 hours to look like that. Did you want to address Will Fork and Brace?
I unfortunately have a very pessimistic outlook about Will Fork's future in New England.
I think Vince Wilfork does too, since he ended his comments with pack my bags and move on.
I don't think he will be back, and I don't think it has a ton to do with Ron Brace.
Who is a big dude, just noticed in the locker room.
I do think, it was nice of you to notice that after a month of training.
But it's
camp.
Different when they just walk through next to you with no pads or anything on it. He's a big dude.
He's a big guy.
And he's not built like Wilfork with the big belly. He's kind of more symmetrically big from top to bottom.
Now, if you want to go all the way back to April when they drafted him, maybe that's when they made their final choice. But I think when you get to this stage in New England, and by this stage I mean you're allowed to get into your last year of a contract and you haven't been extended, I don't really think they have much interest in doing so. And certainly if I think they could get something that they felt was very advantageous to the team, then I think the Patriots would be willing to talk. But I don't think Will Fulk is going to be willing to take much less, and I don't think the Patriots are going to be willing to offer what he feels like he's worth. So I don't have a good feeling. I think Vince Wilfork's final season in New England will be 2009.
You know the problem I have, and I kind of think franchise tag is going to come into play here for him.
So Mike Reese wrote about that a little bit today, saying why don't they, you know, as a possible suggestion, why don't they agree not to franchise him next year? That way you ensure that you get a happy Will Fulk, and then you deal
with
him.
I think they're
going to
franchise him.
You might be right.
And I think that would be giving up something they're not willing to give up at this point, because within the landscape, you franchise him for a year. In all likelihood, the next year you either have no football, or you have to have either no football or the new rules with which you're going to be working under. So you can then decide, can I sign him for a 4 or 5 year deal then, or let him walk, or whatever. I mean, you buy yourself that year that you need.
You're right.
So I wouldn't give that up either, especially with him playing things out the way he's playing things out. As you said, he kind of lost the upper hand in the way he handles himself. So they, as a business, need to take advantage of that, and I think they will. So
one of Andy's little pet peeves that came out from the Rivers contract, I just saw up there again. You know, it has his what is it? 6 years and $92 million, between $38 and $39 million guaranteed. And Andy makes a very good point. If it's a guaranteed total, it should be an exact total. It shouldn't be about.
I mean, it
around.
Just shows how much football players get screwed. They have non-guaranteed contracts, and then the guaranteed portions of their contract are, it's a fluid situation, the guarantee.
We'll decide
Why
later
is
what
it
we want to do.
Fluid? That's stupid. If it's guaranteed, it should be guaranteed. That's Natalie Noel, by the way, the girl that you fell in love with over there.
Oh,
Natalie
I didn't fall
Noel.
In love with her, but she is hot. I have to give
She's stacked.
Who is this from?
Todd in Jacksonville.
Todd,
she is
well done.
Stacked.
But yeah, I do agree with Andy. She's a little trashy looking, but you know,
Son
who am I?
A bitch. Our listeners are the best.
They are.
I made a joke about add 3 inches, and somebody sent an email with add 3 inches as a subject headline. TG and NJ. Is Crable done, is his question. Paul Perillo, you conversed with Crable at length today, so can you tell me, is he done?
That would be an incorrect statement, Andy. I did indeed go up to Sean Crable, tried to talk to him a little bit, and frankly, I was going to ask him about that. I was going to ask him how he felt as a guy who 2 years in now has seen the field very little. And, you know, how much that was worrying him at this stage. But very politely, very cordially, we talked for about a minute, I would say, and he didn't really want – I didn't ask him any questions. I never got that far. He said he didn't want to talk today.
Don't you feel like he's, like, stealing a roster spot?
Well, I'm wondering if he's got one. I think he's on the bubble. I think he's one of the guys. That's why he was one of the guys I mentioned in that. There's so many guys in different – he's a younger guy who's been hurt. There's so many different – you know, Paris Lennon is a veteran who did all his work elsewhere, but he's been hurt. We haven't seen him do anything in New England. Does that give him any more rope, you know, based on the fact that he's been a productive player in Green Bay and Detroit? I don't know. And these are the kinds of things that I think, you know, Bill and his coaching staff, you know, are weighing. I think – not to sound like I'm copping out. I think Crable is on, but I think he's firmly on the bubble. I think it's just too much, too early to pull the plug on a third-round pick.
Now, I feel
what
like
do you think?
I feel like he's going down the road of Ben Watson. Looks the part, has all the measurables, the build, everything.
Listen, if you can't get
I
on the field
think
to play,
he's never going to contribute.
And you know, I've been a very big defender of Sean Crable. But if you can't get on the field and play, though that was the game last night. But you look at the Red Sox highlights;
they
would have been 4-1. They would have been down after 3, and then they ended up getting 6 runs in this inning. Anyway,
what you interrupted yourself.
What do you think? Well, I wanted to get your thoughts on Crable.
I think he's stealing a roster spot. I think he's done nothing to earn a roster
you
spot,
think he'll get
and
one,
I think
though.
He's going to get one.
Yeah, I do too.
Which, that's one of those where you get by with potential and draft status. We should mention old friend Vince Redd, who was claimed off waivers by the Chiefs, was subsequently released by the Chiefs and suspended by the National Football League for 4 games. No clear, specific reason of what exactly he failed, but yeah, I mean, you have to think that's a drug suspension of some sort.
Well, Andy and I were very much on the he's under suspicion category from the day he walked in here, right?
Yes. Let's see. We'll go Jack from London. Is this guy really from London?
Or is he really Jack London?
No, I think based on his email address, he's really from London. Jack, you'll be happy to know that there was a crew from Sky TV in the house today. Got to open the Tom Brady press conference with two questions, and then are doing interviews, sit-down interviews with some other players, including Richard Seymour. And I think they threw Brady for a little bit of a loop. First, they just asked about the London game and, you know, excited to go there. Brady gave a good answer. And then they said, Tom, you, the best athlete in our area, in our sports, is David Beckham. And you and he live a very similar lifestyle. And Brady kind of got, like, a little bit blushed and red and said, yeah, I don't know about the same, similar lifestyle.
They are very similar.
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, you could argue that the Brady's a little higher. I would think, because I think Giselle is higher than Posh Spice.
Well, nationally or internationally?
Internationally.
I think Beckham is higher than Brady internationally,
I do too,
though.
But I think the difference between Beckham and Brady is smaller than the difference. Posh Spice was big for a couple of years as part of a group.
No question, but she Giselle also, but she's like been big since she left that model group. You could argue that Victoria Beckham's more famous since she left the Spice Girls.
Really, what's she done?
Just being Victoria Beckham.
Well, that's kind of my point, though.
I think nationally it's clearly Brady.
I don't think Giselle, if anything, Brady is the Mr. Giselle.
But I think internationally, I think that there's a bigger gap between Beckham and Brady than you think. Internationally.
Hmm. Yeah, see, I think Giselle is...
I think there's a lot of places in Europe that don't know who Tom Brady is. I don't think there's really any place that doesn't know who David Beckham is.
Maybe. And I think the places that don't know Brady are shrinking by the minute because of his marriage to Giselle.
Yeah, no doubt. Your point about Giselle is spot on. I mean, she's far bigger than Victoria Beckham. Although Victoria Beckham's pretty hot. Got to give it that.
I think Victoria Beckham's hotter.
Oh, than Giselle?
Yeah.
No question.
I think she's been enhanced, though.
Oh, yeah.
So you wouldn't like enhancement. That. Who said I don't like that?
Plus, she usually has short hair. I don't know what her hair's like
no
now.
Problem.
So she couldn't put a ponytail on and just, you know, roll out of bed on a Saturday
morning.
My
thoughts on breast implants are much like my thoughts on steroids. If you don't need to take steroids like Bo and still be the greatest athlete ever, then fine. You're the greatest athlete ever. If you need to take
how do you work a Bo Jackson reference every single
I'd
show?
I'd prefer massive natural breasts, but massive fake breasts are cool, too.
Speaking of fake breasts, did you happen to hear that story? And I know that you listen to Maddie in the Morning
all the
time.
Yes, I did. The serial numbers?
Yeah, the girl that was identified by
disgusting
her serial numbers.
Made me nauseous.
And then they said, you know, Lisa won't have to worry about that because her serial number was God. You know, was God-given. That's tangent number one.
We do need to tell people, for our local listeners, we have kind of discovered a comparison between our show, PFW in Progress, and a real radio show, Maddie in the Morning
here
in Boston.
And you would never think it. Because Kiss 108 here in Boston
is
thought to be kind of like the girly radio, and the only guys that listen are kind of Eric.
You're here today?
Kind of Eric-like.
He hurt his elbow, so it was in a sling, so he says, yeah, I switch hands. Feels like somebody else is doing it. What? You can't say that! But I figure if he can say it on FCC radio, then I can say it here.
It's very similar to us, where they say a lot of inappropriate things.
Except for the fact that it's FCC regulated. It's on real radio.
And it happens to be one of the highest rated shows in Boston radio history.
It's unbelievable. Let's get back to Jack from London. I found this article on the website that ranked the 10 best Patriots young... A little thing popped up, just kind of distracted me. Best young Patriots. Gerard Mayo was first, followed by Merriweather, O'Connell, Butler, Wilhite, Crable, Chung, Brace, Guyton, Wheatley. Do you guys think we could at least be a playoff team just with the young talent that we have? Also, do you think O'Connell would be good enough to replace Brady when he retires?
That's an interesting question.
The latter part, I don't really get the first question. There's only 10 players listed.
Right. And here's my other question is, what is a young player defined as?
According to this, they are all, well, Merriweather is the oldest.
Third year?
Three or under.
Three
Most
or
of
under.
Them are twos or ones. Merriweather's a three.
So I don't know if you have enough. I mean, first of all, I don't know how much talent that is. I mean, in theory, and there's some question marks in there. You know, Wheatley, Crable, guys that have done really nothing as Patriots.
I would say
Brace.
After Merriweather, they're all question marks. I mean, even Butler, you think positively of, but he's still a major question mark. Who knows what he's going to do?
Right.
I mean, Merriweather has shown he can play safety in the NFL. He's played enough games. How well, that's up for debate, but he can play.
You know, Guyton, I assume, is on that list?
Yep.
So, you know, Guyton has done something, but I don't know if you can answer the first question.
Yeah.
You know, how well would they be able
to
play as a team?
I mean,
you make a good point. There's only a certain amount.
You don't have a running back. You don't have
Kevin O'Connell, I think, has a chance to replace Tom Brady as starting quarterback. Do you think there's a chance for that?
What?
Do you think there's a chance Kevin O'Connell eventually replaces Brady? Or do you think that Brady's 10-year thing is in place?
I think Brady's going to be here too long for O'Connell to be in the picture.
Okay. Yeah,
regardless of what I think of O'Connell.
Based on Brady, you know, I used to think that Brady was going to be not around long enough, but now the way that he's talking, I think there's a chance. But I think that I would probably put like a 25% chance that O'Connell takes the reins from Brady someday. Not because he's too good and he replaces him. I'm just, you know,
I put Tom's it days end here. Chance. One other note about Brady.
I haven't given up on him.
He said that we know we're going to play more in the third preseason game. But I think he was kind of generalizing. I wouldn't say it as fact. He said it kind of in terms of how the preparation for that game is different. You know, you like those questions about the third preseason game and the preparation for it.
Yeah.
Richard.
Yeah.
Joining the show momentarily.
Brady.
Well, that was Brady.
That sounded like Seymour.
Big superstars with deep voices. Could have been Andre Tippett. He seems like he's expecting to play. That would put him in the third quarter because the first game they played basically two quarters.
That was what I was going to ask you. Is he saying we're going to play more? You know, is he talking about the last game or the first game? Because the last game he only played two series.
No, I meant in general, I thought.
I mean, I would assume I assume he's going to play into the third quarter because that's pretty much been what Belichick has done every year with his starting offense. Now, last year it was Castle. But that was the starting offense last year.
Okay, this question is for me, Paul, so you can take a break and have a Pepsi.
Thank you.
This is from Phil in Austin. Andy, of the cornerbacks that are expected to make the roster, which ones play left side only, right side only, either side, or are mostly in the slot? Right side only would be Lee Bodden. Left side only would be Jonathan Wilhite, but he also plays in the slot. I've seen Springs on the left side mostly, I believe.
I'd be happy to help you out, but this wasn't addressed to me.
He has not played in the slot, but I think he could. I think he could play pretty much anywhere in the secondary.
He played the majority of his career in the slot.
And who are the Wheatley, I think, can play both sides, although I've seen him primarily on the right, I believe. Is that accurate, Paul? I'm asking you.
No, he played left the other day.
Who was the second right corner?
Oh, no, he was on the right the other day. He was. When he gave up the home run, Chris, the touchdown was on the right side. That is correct. But I do think the only guy who really hasn't moved at all is Bodden, you know, for this camp. I think all of these guys have the ability to probably
do. He's been
do
entrenched it. As the starter at right corner, and you know what that gets him?
A cut.
Just kidding.
Based on last year. No, cut. We actually think he's had a very strong camp. So, I don't think anybody thought that Bryant had a really strong camp last year. I think we were stunned that he got cut, but I don't think anybody felt like he had a really strong camp.
Oh, Alejandro Bogota. Hello, Fred, Paul, Andy, and Eric. Well, it's Paul and Andy.
Just the A-team today.
Good call on The Hangover, Fred. I really enjoyed it. Neither of us have seen it. One question from someone outside the U.S. I know the movie is meant to be exaggerated, but do people lose their mind once they land in Vegas? Yes, that's generally what you go to Vegas for. It's kind of what their whole what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas thing was built on.
Yeah, that's accurate.
One football question. What's your take on the four-man front? 1, lack of depth at linebacker. 2, Vince Wilfork's contract issues. 3, I quote Fred, Belichick wanted to prove that he could go 16-0 with two different defensive schemes. I don't think it's that one. I think it's a combination of factors. I think lack of depth at linebacker has to have a part in it. They don't have two outside linebackers for a 3-4.
I think it has very little to do with Wilfork in particular. I think that's a very small percentage.
Oh, yeah.
But I agree
with... the Boston Globe alluded to yesterday that maybe they're giving Wilfork the opportunity to prove himself and throwing him a bone by letting him play in a four-man front and
I think even
shoot some
less
gaps.
Of a chance of that being accurate, but...
I do, too. Although, it could be a side offshoot that helps him when he hits free agency because he can say, 3-4 teams, 4-3 teams, line up. You got film of me doing it all, baby.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think the other part... You know, you said the point about the depth of the inside linebacker in particular. I also think, you know, for the strict personnel that they have, Andy, I think they're using a couple of guys, Burgess and Bantakane, that they might not be overly comfortable with as stand-up outside linebackers. I mean, in essence, that they are linebackers, but I think that they may be more suited to four-man fronts, you know, as you say. What's our new way of saying it?
I don't know. I wasn't listening.
Hand in the dirt.
Oh, yeah.
Got to have the hand in the dirt.
Rather than up in space on 2 feet, it just doesn't work.
Where you have to plant.
You stick your foot in the ground.
Stick your foot in the ground. I forgot.
Oh. People who like to stick things places. Salt from Orlando is on the phone. How's Peppa?
People like to stick things. I don't know. I'm doing great. How you guys doing?
Good. What's
How
going
are you,
on?
Salt?
Not much. I got a couple questions. Do you think the Patriots will have a goal line back this year? Or do you think? How do you think that's going to work?
What do you mean by a goal line back? Somebody who gets all the carries in short yard situations?
Yeah, do you think someone's going to get all the carries, or do you think whoever is prominent in that series is just going to get the crack at it?
No, well, I think Sammy Morris is their best short yardage runner, so I think he would get those, but I think with all the guys, the question is the health. I literally think it's going to be week to week, and you just hope that two of your big three are healthy, and you go from there, because I don't feel all that confident that Taylor, Morris, and Maroney are going to be healthy and part of the game plan for 16 straight weeks.
You think they're going to carry Ben Jarvis on the active roster too?
I do. I actually think they're going to keep all five of the running backs. And I think Ben Jarvis, from what I've seen from him, a little bit shiftier, a little bit more athletic this camp, maybe he's the Kevin Faulk kind of trainee and pick up some, you know, third down type carries if Faulk needs a little breather. I've been impressed with what I've seen from him, and I think he might be a possibility for that role down the road. Paul?
Okay. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I'm with Andy 100% really on all fronts. I think you're going to see different guys scoring touchdowns. I think Fred Taylor is a guy who's been productive in goal line situations. Morris is obviously a big, Maroney probably has the least amount of touchdowns of that group, but I think he's certainly capable of doing it. But I think, you know, really anybody but Faulk would be a candidate for that role.
Even Maroney?
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Whoever I think is being productive at the time, and I think they might have different game plans, will call for different backs. We saw the four widespread, against Cincinnati, and that seemed to be something they wanted to get a look at Fred Taylor in. You know, if they have similar game plans like that, you might see Taylor, is more involved in the game plan. He could stay in there and be a goal line back. I really think that, you know, whoever's healthy and whoever's productive is probably going to stay in the game and get touchdowns. It's going to be tough for you fantasy guys to try to figure it out, but I think you might have to wait a few weeks to see how it all unfolds and see who ends up, you know, see what the trends are.
Yeah. Who do you think the best cornerback is? I mean, are good in practice and not good in games, like Baden. You know, Sean Springs hasn't been really in a lot of practices, but you guys seem to think he's going to make the team.
Oh, yeah.
Who do you think the best corner is?
That's a tough, tough question.
The best corner that I think they've had has been Baden. Now, I don't think he looked great against the Eagles. I thought he was fine against Cincinnati. But I just think they have a bunch of guys that are pretty good. I don't think they have a Ty Law or an Asante Samuel, but I think they have three or four guys that I'd feel pretty comfortable with if they were in the game.
I'm going to go Jonathan Wilhite. I like him.
I don't love him.
That's all I got. I don't really. I mean, I like the way he plays. I think, opposed to what Fred said, I think his issue is going to be turning his hips and running down the field. I think up, 15 yards beyond the line of scrimmage, I think he is a physical corner, will be around the ball a lot.
Yeah.
I mean,
he's
intrigued to see him make some plays if he can stay healthy.
He's competitive, but I think the last thing Andy just said is important. I think he's going to have some durability issues because I think he's a pretty small guy. All right.
All right, Salt.
Oh, there you are.
Yo, my bad. I was just letting you guys talk. I didn't want to interrupt.
I thought Paul put you to sleep. It happens to me all the time.
Thing.
Don't worry.
I heard Alejandro talking about the Hangover.
Yeah.
I want to give everyone a heads up on PFW. Inglourious Basterds is not the movie it is in the trailer.
Okay.
It's not an action movie. It's not a war movie. It's Pulp Fiction pre-D-Day invasion. So anyone, don't want anyone to get their hopes up.
Okay. Did you like it?
I liked it, but I was very misled. It could have been, if it was what it was in the trailer, it would have been way better. But that's just me.
Okay. We'll keep that in mind. Guys. We'll
let
Fred know.
I've heard good things about it, but it's too violent.
All right. See you, Salt. Tell Pepper we said hi.
Bye.
Good stuff from Salt. He mixed in some cornerback breakdowns with some goal line running backs and even threw in a movie review.
Now I need to get back to Alejandro's email. Last but not least, I'm planning on switching to HD this week. I have some questions, but please don't rip me if they're too basic. They are not too basic. I have no idea what he's talking about. I'm being offered a decoder with a hard drive, but do you know of any HD decoder that comes with a DVD burner? Do you know if I can plug my actual DVD burner in?
Doc,
is it worth to have a spare HDMI cable?
You can definitely plug your DVD burner into a HD cable box. It's just like setting up a VCR. I don't know of a hard drive that comes with a DVD burner, but if you already have the burner and you have an extra HDMI cable, you should be good.
Okay, there it is. I would only believe 50% of it. Doc's asi-asi on his advice. That means so-so, Paul.
I know
Bogot,
what it meant.
Bogot, I can, you know, I can dabble in the Spanish. Next up, we have this team needs an experienced QB, Paul. This is from Mensa in the Bronx. How are y'all doing? Will you guys agree with me that the Patriots need an experienced backup QB for the coming season? I do not think they're going to go far with the crop of backups they have now. Well, I agree with that. I think they're going to go far with the starter they have now. One thing we should realize is that Tom Brady is coming from a serious knee injury, and as such, he should be rested at the midpoint of the fourth quarter in some games if we are ahead. But looking and watching the backups we have, I'm not sure that will be enough for us to be excited about the coming season. I'm already confused, but I would like to hear your opinions on this. O'Connell and Hoyer are nowhere near backup caliber, if anything at all. They are third stringers. You remember how long it took Matt Castle to become, a backup to Tom Brady? He was a third stringer behind QBs like Vinny Testaverde and others. O'Connell does not have that luxury. Mensa from the Bronx.
Well, I disagree a little bit. I understand the reservation, but first of all, Matt Castle was never a number three behind Vinny Testaverde. He was number two, and Testaverde was three in the short time that they were together. I understand the larger point. You're wondering about the lack of experience, and you saw how long it took Castle last year to really kind of get up to speed, and he was around, you know, in his fourth year, and it took him a little while to sort of get up to speed. I don't feel like there's a veteran backup that can just come in here. I think if you're going to do that, you need to do it in the offseason and get the guy in here, learn your offensive system, which by all accounts is very difficult on quarterbacks. I think you need to get a guy like Brian Greasy or Tim Brittay or Chris Sims or those guys that are always talked about as being candidates for this. You need to get them in here in May and June, Andy. I don't know how you feel about it, but I think you need to get them indoctrinated into the system and go into camp with those guys. You're seeing how hard it's been for Andrew Walter. Not that he's a great backup quarterback in this league, but coming in August, I think August 3rd or something like that, he came in August 1st, right at the very beginning of the month. It's been a learning curve. It's hard to get this offense that quickly and to just learn on the fly. I think they're going to go in with O'Connell and Walter as their quarterbacks behind Brady. And listen, if something happens to Brady, you're going to be in trouble, just like you were last year. I don't think that would be any different if you had Greasy here or Rattay here or some other backup quarterback.
Here's the way I feel about the offense, and it's probably going to sound overly simplistic, but if Brady, Moss, and Welker stay healthy, I think they're fine. But if any one of those gets hurt, I think not only are they in trouble in terms of who plays that position, I think the entire offense is in trouble because I look at not only the backups, they don't have suitable backups really for any of those guys, but the coaching. They do not have an offensive coordinator ready to, on the fly, get people ready to go. The quarterback's coach is a guy that hasn't been in the system all that long and, oh, by the way, is the de facto offensive coordinator, so is spread a little bit thin there as it is. Their wide receivers coach is in his first year in the system and has been tutored throughout camp by Nick Caserio. Their tight ends coach is a promotion from a coaching assistant to a first-year tight ends coach, working with a bunch of guys that weren't on the team in the past, and for all we know, Alex Smith and Chris Baker could be key parts of this. They're new to the system. So I really do think if they can stay healthy, if the offense that succeeded a couple years ago is out there, they'll be fine because I think Bill O'Brien or Bill Belichick can call plays. Everything will be fine. But if anything falls apart in there, I think the whole house of cards could come down because I do think those coaching changes will be magnified as you try to, on the run, change your offense, change your scheme, insert new players, guys who don't necessarily know all the adjustments, the system or whatever. I think that could be a major problem. And kind of playing without a net there.
It's a great point. And I think with Moss and Welker especially, you've been pretty fortunate the 2 years. You have two guys that have been highly productive and involved in, I mean, Randy Moss is involved in as many plays, more plays than any member of the offense other than the quarterback. Mm-hmm. You know, these guys are on the field every single play. And you really haven't had, they haven't missed a game, neither one of them. They both played all 16 both years. So that is a concern to me. They're such an integral part of the offense. If you were to lose one of them, I think you would really see some adjustments needed to be made. I think they would have to do things differently than they're planning on doing. Now, they're always a game plan team, and I understand that they're very multiple and very multifaceted. But it's one thing to be multifaceted with those weapons, and another thing to try to be multifaceted when you've lost the ability to do one of those things. You know,
and to do it with a guy that's been in the system forever, as opposed to Bill O'Brien, who is learning on the fly as a coordinator here.
Just as an example, if you were to lose Randy Moss, you obviously have that ability to stretch the field with Moss, and Galloway can get deep too. But without Moss, I think it's a lot easier to sort of contain Galloway and now maybe double up underneath on Welker and maybe make life a little bit more difficult on Welker. Welker doesn't see a lot of double teams. He sees a lot of tight coverage now because everybody knows how dangerous he is, and a lot of teams put one of their main cornerbacks on him in the slot. But now think about if you're rolling up double coverage against him, you know, maybe he's still getting a lot of catches, but maybe some of his yards after the catcher are eliminated. He's not getting as many first downs because you're not worried as much about getting beaten deep that you were with Moss, even though they didn't just throw the ball deep to Moss. So I think your point's a really good one. They would have to find other ways to do it, and you'd have to wonder how much the ability to adjust on the fly with such an inexperienced staff.
WebRadioPatriots.com, WebRadioPatriots.com, 508-543-7482. Our good friend Sam in Chicago checking in.
Sam, excellent job.
The artiste.
Excellent job on that.
Well done. I still think we need to get like a color original poster or something for the studio and maybe even for my home. I'd probably put that up in my home. I don't know if my wife would let me put it up anywhere, you know, where everyone will see it, but maybe the home office. Hello, A-Team. Thanks for the show. A quick few trivia questions. Paul, you love trivia?
I do.
Almost as much as you love food.
Oh, that's not true.
For the season opener on the 14th, who will cover T.O.?
Sean Springs.
Paul going with the cliche Sean Springs T.O. story.
I don't know. My guess is
they'll just play defense.
Well, I was going to say, my guess is they're not going to line anybody up against him. They're not going to move guys back and forth. Whatever side he's on, that side will cover him.
Score the first touchdown for the Patriots.
Ooh, I thought these were trivia questions.
Lawrence Boney Maroney.
Who's going to score the first touchdown for the Patriots? I'm going to go with Chris Baker.
That's who I would have gone with. So now I'll go with Wes Welker, because there's no one like Wes in the National Football League, according to Tom Brady. Who will make the first interception for the Patriots?
Richard Seymour.
That's dead air. Paul's so far outside the box that he doesn't even see the box.
I'll go
Jonathan Wilhite is the answer.
Okay. Oh, is the answer. Okay.
What's the division of touchdowns for the Patriots at the end of the game, passing versus rushing?
2-2.
2-2.
Two rushing, two passing.
And they win 28?
34-17.
34-17, Paul Perillo is predicting. Sam, you got all your answers. You even got the right ones from me.
What are the odds I'm going to remember 34-17 in
3 weeks?
Todd
Porter with the best subject headline of the week.
Paul is fat.
No, Paul is a jackass.
Oh, okay.
Who's on your team? Pick one. Oh, really? This has nothing to do with Paul being a jackass? That's
no,
a disappointment.
He just likes me.
Who's on your team? Pick one. Hoyer or Walter?
Walter.
Maroney or BJGE?
They're both on.
Watson or Alex
But Maroney
Smith?
If I have to pick one. Watson in that one.
Slater or Love?
I don't think either one of them. Slater if I had
you
to pick one.
You pay terrible at these games. Pick one, he said.
Slater
he
if I have
all
to
all the
pick
extra
one,
words.
I'm just telling you my opinions.
Love is the answer there. Yates or Wendell?
Yates.
DeVree or Alex Smith?
I'm going to go Alex Smith, since DeVree's already off the team.
But this is your team. You pick one.
Alex Smith.
Team.
I did. Alex Smith.
Pryor or Wright?
Wright.
And I think a great one, TBC or Alexander?
Alexander.
I would never have thought in April, but I think 7 or 8 rookies could make this team. Sorry about that, Paul. Todd in Nova Scotia. That's a fun game. Quickly. Brace, Chung, Butler, Edelman.
Volmer.
Volmer.
Pryor.
Pryor.
Es todo nada más.
Oh, yeah. So it's only going to be six, not seven or eight. Mike Duggan from Charlotte. When Bill drafted all the defensive linemen, I said to my
Ingram
son.
Although Ingram has a chance. Sorry.
Son of a bitch. He's always going to interrupt. Yep, yep, yep. It's the Paul show. When Bill drafted all the defensive linemen, I said to my son, he's going to switch to a 4-3 defense. Then he brought in more veteran defensive linemen. The more I think about it, I think he is doing it because so many teams are switching to the 3-4 and offenses are gearing up for the 3-4. It also gives him the ability to play either one based on who they are playing. It also gives a little cushion with all the contract situations. It also reduces the need for proven linebackers. Do you think they can be successful running a 4-3 base defense?
Yeah. I mean, they've done it a lot. The 4-3, I think, is, and Andy and I, we've talked about this a little bit. I think that's been one of the more overblown stories of camp so far. I think they've used more four-man fronts in this camp than in the past, but they always run four-man fronts in training camp. Always, always, always.
Do you think there is any long-term focus, goal?
No.
Philosophy with the 4-3?
No. I don't. But that doesn't mean I'm right.
I think there might be.
It doesn't mean I'm right. I just think that this is what Bill likes to do. I think Bill likes to have the ability to use either front.
I agree with that.
I think he wants to use more four-man front this year than he has in the past. I think he might
be going four-man front.
Oh, yeah, I do.
I think he might be
for
transitioning.
Good? Forever?
Yep.
I think he might be growing
frustrated with the talent pool available coming from colleges, and he might feel like four-man fronts, he will have a greater pool to pull from. I think combining the limited talent with the increased number of people kind of looking in that pool based on some of his cast-offs.
Listen, that email, all those reasons the emailer, I think every single one of those may have some validity.
Be a real pain in the butt covering the combine if I have to start covering all these 4-3 teams and not knowing is Bill 3-4, 4-3.
Well, plus you have to wonder
how
much different skill set is he asking for or looking for if he's going to play four-man fronts.
Right.
Because I don't know if the answer to that is much different.
Right.
Do you? I mean, you know what I'm saying.
Well, internally, I don't think it'll be any different. The tackles. You're looking for big two-gap and tackles. How he would handle it on the edges,
yeah,
it would be interesting. I mean, I think it's interesting with Derek Burgess and Tully Bantakane and what they're going to do. But I do think there might be a hint of, you just can't find the talent for what I want to do, so sooner or later I have to say I shouldn't do it anymore.
Which is funny because he's been so successful with it.
Right.
And let's face it, they didn't have a lack of success last year because they ran a 3-4.
Right.
There was the back four that was terrible.
Theoretically, you could say if they ran a four-man front, maybe they would have different pass rush. You know, everything would kind of be a butterfly effect. Everything would be changed.
Yeah, but do you really think that?
Oh, I don't know. If he was looking for 4-3 ends rather than 3-4 outside linebackers, would he be pulling for more talent? Would he be looking at it differently? I mean, I can't answer that. That's a huge research-type question. I have no idea. But I think there might be a frustration. Not enough talent to go around for 3-4 fronts. I'm out. You all can look forward to
it. I think the emailer brings up some good points. I do.
We're going to go back to the phones for somebody else.
Are we going to take a break today?
Jim in Texas is on the phone. Jimmy, your favorite
guy. Andy, what is going on, my man? What is up?
Not much. What do you got going on for us today?
Well, I'm back on a normal sleep schedule again. The Red Bull is out. No life in reference to Paul. I am motivated. I'm focused. I'm energetic. I just got done with the gym. I'll work out, and I wanted to call the show.
Good stuff.
Let me chime in real quick about Bantakane and I think he makes this team. I mean, I'm going to go with what I've seen, what they got. You guys really believe that Alexander is going to make this team?
Yes,
I do, yeah.
Wow.
I think he's emergency depth on the inside, and I think they like his special team abilities.
I think not only that, but I think he can play inside or outside if he had to. I don't think he's an ideal outside guy, but I think he offers them a true backup on defense as well as good special teams play. Problem with Eric Alexander is he's always hurt.
Yes, I agree with you. Here's another question for you. Ornberger, the fourth-round pick they got out of Penn State, you don't have him making this team at all?
Oh, I don't know. He's
firmly implanted on the bubble.
Yeah, he's in the mix.
I don't think he's going to make the team.
I think that, you know, I'm kind of in agreement. I counted the other night. I looked at I'm not a big draft guy. I had them actually making eight players on this team, and you think about this. Neither one of your third-round picks, McKenzie and Brandon Tate, which I wanted to ask you about in a minute, but none of them, really even get a factor. And this is like the third year in a row that the third round pick for the Pats really didn't make any impact whatsoever. It seems like it's been forever and a week when we had a third round pick come in and really make a splash. What are your thoughts on that?
That's a blind spot.
for this organization. The third round has been a tough round in general.
Yeah, seems that way.
Yeah, they've had a couple. Like David Thomas has been okay, but if you look
really
back,
hasn't produced that much. Though. I mean, his most memorable play to date is that unnecessary roughness call.
You're right. You're right.
God, I was so mad that I could spit blood out of my eyes. I was really irritated with this call.
Spit blood out of your eyes. That would be
watching that game here. I was in Texas, and I was like, you got to be kidding me.
They've had a tough time, and Bill actually, and I say this all the time, but Bill goes through a long explanation of the third round that he has talked to Andy and I about in the past. It's funny, it's a long kind of convoluted thing, but he feels like a lot of third round picks are first round pick talents that for whatever reason don't get picked in the first round. Now, some of them are they had off-field incidents or something, or they had an injury that caused them to slip in the round, you know, like Brandon Tate. You know, for example, they had maybe some sort of academic issue that caused them to miss time.
And
so there were a lot. In other words, what I'm trying to get at is there are a lot of chances taken in the third round.
Well,
people feel like
they
have some talent, but there's an issue there. And then you wonder, is the issue big enough to prevent you from taking a third round pick? Bill seemed to explain to us that that's the round that you take your chances is the third round. And it makes sense if you think about it as to why they've had a difficult time sort of hitting on all of those.
Well, and then, you know, it's probably for me ever to question Coach Belichick, but I always thought this, though. If you're still picking in the top, you got to figure the third round, you're still somewhere around 100.
Yep.
Meaning you're picking a guy who's one of the top 100 college football players in the draft, and I would just, I myself, you know, being the guy that I am, I would think that you would be more likely to, because he's right about so many things. Like, I mean, I was so off on Vollmer. I was mad, but you know what? That guy could be a player for this team. And another quick point, what is Brandon Tate's status right now? Is he going to be put on PUP, IR, or what's the deal?
Well, he'll be on NFI, which is essentially PUP. It's similar type rules, and he'll be lost for the beginning of the year and then maybe an option mid-year. I find it doubtful that he'll come in and contribute because I'm not sure there'll be a need. Yeah, I'm not
right
sure
now.
There'll be a need. I'm not sure you'd be willing to hand over return duties to a guy in the middle of the season.
I think you'd have to have a rash of injuries for him to factor into the 2019.
So in all likelihood, this is a redshirt year for him where he'll hang around the team, learn the offense, and then hopefully be, you know, a guy to contribute and a developmental wide receiver next year.
And that's just a guess, though, Jim, because, you know, we haven't seen Tate at all. And for all we know,
not once. Wow.
And for all we know, he's been out there and working and really close to coming back. And, you know, they're going to unveil him, you know, late in the preseason. It just, to me, when you've missed all of this camp, it makes no sense to cash in a chip. And to me, is being able to put him on NFI.
I'm sorry. With the emergence of Edelman recently, do you think that there's a much less likelihood that they're going to try to bring him along quicker than maybe, well, you know, we got six receivers now with Aiken. You could have actually seven. You know, maybe we don't necessarily need to bring this Tate guy up right now.
Sure. Edelman's part of the conversation at receiver and why you have so many bodies, and he's also part of the conversation at returner. So, yeah, I think that does make Tate less of a need for this season at this point.
I drove back and forth from Texas to Georgia in the last week or so, whatever. So I listened to, like, your 2 weeks' worth of your podcast, and I would just say this. I listened to the Jonathan Kraft interview, and I didn't know this, getting this from Mr. Kraft, that Coach Belichick was an economics major. That really makes sense because, you know, if you think about this, the Patriots have never had salary cap problems since he's been there. Name me a team that didn't have a huge salary cap hit or dead money or something like that going on. And I give Belichick all the credit in the world. This team is never really seemingly in a situation where they have to cut players just to, you know, like some teams have to cut five players to bring their players in, but we've never had that. So,
well, the thing I would really credit Belichick in that department is that he was the first, in my opinion, to really manage that situation effectively. He kind of changed the line of thinking from the whole credit card thing that a lot of teams did, where they would get small base salaries early, bubble payments late. Now you have to cut the guy. Now Bill has had to cut guys for salary cap reasons too, but.
Sure.
You know, Lawyer Malloy is.
And Coach was one of them.
Right. You know, Lawyer Malloy was one that he signed to an extension,
absolutely,
and eventually he had to cut him. But your point is very well taken. Very rarely do the Patriots put themselves in that situation.
And think about this. When they won the Super Bowl with Ted Washington at the nose, and I couldn't think of a better guy at nose tackle in this scheme ever than him. No offense to Vince Wilfork, but they were only paying him a couple hundred thousand, which to us is a lot of money, but
in the NFL schemes really wasn't a lot. And the difference between what Oakland signed him and what we signed him was only about $200,000. But Bill said, we're only going to pay this much money for this position. And then he really held firm on that. And, I mean, much to, you know, I give him a lot of credit, though, because a lot of teams eventually, for certain, like four or five guys, well, we'll give a little and we give a little. And the next thing you know, you're $2 or $3 million over the cap, and all of a sudden you have to cut a player.
Mm-hmm.
So I give them a lot of, they don't overpay at a certain position ever.
And I would take that. I would take that even further.
We're going to get Wolford back based on that, because most teams are now going to the 3-4, which now means that nose tackles are more expensive because more teams want them. And now we go to the 4-3 where we don't need a nose tackle as much. So I think it makes economic sense in that regard.
Well, I think defensive tackles, the price rose when a guy signed a $100 million contract.
Exactly.
I mean,
I concur completely, but, I mean, again, that's just what I see anyways. And my final thought is the Ravens defense watching against the Jets. I got two things from that game. One, the Ravens are going to have a great defense. Two, I think the Jets are going to be no better than 8-8. I think they're going to have a lot of growing pains with Sanchez. And just think about this. There's a lot of difference between him playing against Oregon and playing against the Belichick coach defense and or the Ravens. So with that, you gotta love the Jets. They're going to be finishing up middle of the pack again.
As we like it around here. All right, Jim.
I agree.
All right. Take care, guys.
See you, Jim. Go have some Red Bull.
I actually think week two is going to be very interesting with Sanchez. I think that Belichick could really torture that poor kid. You know, playing him that quickly out of the gate is only his second game. I think he could throw four picks.
Speaking of torture, Paul and Andy for an hour and 5 minutes to open PFW in progress. We're going to put the torture to an end and take a break.
At American Airlines, we know it seems like you're on the road almost as much as your favorite sports team. We know you've scheduled a business trip to a city where your team happens to be playing that night. And we know that on every trip, you inevitably forget to bring a toothbrush. But you never forget that old pair of socks you wear on game day to bring your team luck. We know for you, it's not just a seat on a flight to a place. It's a seat on a flight to your life. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
The New England Revolution are taking on the best teams and the best players in MLS, and you can be there.
Gillette Stadium comes alive!
Revolution 4-game mini plan is the best way to be at the games that fit your schedule. Guarantee your ticket to four of the biggest matches of the season at Gillette Stadium. Opponents like Cuauhtemoc Blanco and the Chicago Fire, Juan Pablo Angel and the New York Red Bulls, conference rival DC United, and Freddie Lundberg and the expansion Seattle Sounders FC. The Revolution 4-game mini plan starts at just $68. Order now and get a limited edition Revolution long sleeve t-shirt free.
Wow, how about that?
Ticket packages and individual game tickets for the entire season are still available. Call the Revolution ticket office at 1-877-GET-REVS, Ticketmaster at 1-800-745-3000, or log on to revolutionsoccer.net. Pride.
Drives it and in. What a goal. Sandy Diaz.
Passion.
Listen to this crowd or up.
Revolution.
50 seasons of New England Patriots football, 3 Super Bowl championships, endless memories.
It's good! It's good! Atta-Bitty-Terry!
Live them all at the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon. Celebrate the greatest players, moments, and teams in Patriots history with sights and sounds that put you right in the action. Step inside the huddle as Tom Brady calls the plays. Go under the hood and review controversial calls just like a replay official. Learn the playbook from head coach Bill Belichick. Take your best shot at a game-winning field goal in the snow and let the confetti rain down while you gaze at the Patriots' 3 Vince Lombardi trophies.
Back-to-back, 3 out of 4. Yes, it's a dynasty.
And don't miss the 30-foot-high displays honoring the team's greatest players or the signature film showing the history of football in New England. The Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, is located next to Gillette Stadium in Foxborough, Mass. And is open 7 days a week. Call 508-698-4800 for more information or go online to thehall@patriotplace.com. The Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon. An unforgettable, exciting, interactive experience.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live, shop retailers, and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Healthcare Center, located on-site at Patriot Patriot Place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epochet. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Rock the Plaza every Saturday and Sunday, to the Kids Club Storytime every Tuesday, to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop. Dine. Enjoy.
Paul Perillo prides himself on being the old-timer of the PFW crew.
Going back to the 40s with Paul.
Well, let's face it, it's actually Andy who makes fun of Paul for being an old-timer. But just because he was born in the 40s or something, it doesn't exactly mean Paul has all the answers. In fact, it seems like just about everything Paul's come up with, he didn't come up with.
I was going to say he's rated the way he should be, too. I was going to say, I read something. This is what I was going to say, just on this topic.
I agree with that wholeheartedly.
That's the way I was going to say. That's probably on mission statement right there.
Paul. I was going to say, you know why it is.
What's the matter, Paul?
No, I was going to say it was before 85, so. I was going to say that, but I don't even know.
Jeez, Paul, what do you know? We're not sure if you ever had an original thought, and even that your catchphrases might be stolen. Right, Eddie Mac?
Maybe I just drink to get drunk.
Lost in there about stealing other people's ideas is you say I a lot. You're kind of like Steve Buckley. I. It's all about you, huh?
Why can't I just say I?
I don't know. Why do you say it three times every time you say it? I
don't know.
I
don't see why you have to make fun of my speech impediment.
Was that guy that used to do that? I. Wasn't that a commercial? I.
I don't know.
Doctor. There was a whole commercial series on I. Is it the Cheez-Its guy?
Crickets.
Oh, I just touched the microphone again. We have some photos.
How do you keep putting the microphone in your mouth?
Just pretend I'm Eric.
You guys are getting windscreens, by the way.
Didn't help me just now when my tongue touched Lord knows what.
No, pretty soon you'd just be swallowing the windscreen.
What?
You heard me.
Not Eric. Anyway, our friend Mike Gherkin.
Gherkin.
Sends in an email as well as some photos. And let's just say the pickle man made my pickle move a little bit with the photos. Elena Santarelli, look her up online. Tremendously hot. I will not say that she ends the debate about the hottest woman in the world because, you know, we're a lucky crew, us men, because there are a lot of hot women on this planet. And I think they're all unique and wonderful in their own way. And her way is from below the neck and above the belly button. But anyway, let's move on to his email. Hi, guys. Great show as always. I thought I would end the... Oh, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. We read that already. Now I've enticed you with eye candy. I thought we could play the over-under game. Unrestricted free agents that make the team. 1.5.
Undrafted, you mean?
It says unrestricted, so I'm assuming...
Then over.
He means Galloway, Taylor, Lennon,
right. Over.
Springs. Over is the answer.
Bodden.
Yeah, it's not even close. Terrible line. Lawrence Maroney rushing. 1,000 yards.
Under.
Over. Barely. Tight ends that make the roster. 3.5.
Under.
Over. Running backs that make the roster, 4.5.
Over.
Total defensive ranking at the end of the year.
How come you didn't answer that one?
Over. 6.5 for total defensive ranking at the end of the year.
Does over mean worse or
bigger number?
Over.
So worse.
Over.
Okay. Over. Total offensive raising ranking at the end of the year, 2.5.
Under.
Over. I think they'll be top 5. Randy Moss touchdowns, 11.5.
Over.
Over. I'm going to go under. Percentage of defense run in the 4-3, 50.5%.
Over.
Over is the right answer. Interceptions by the secondary, 13.5.
Over.
Over is again the right answer. And total number of drafted rookies that make the team, including injured players... So we have to add Tate and anybody they stash is the theory.
Okay.
9.5.
Over. If everybody counts.
Well.
I mean, McKenzie and Tate are immediately in.
Right. And we had
plus, I think there's going to be like seven or eight that are going to make it anyway.
It's not practice, a bad number, though.
Practice squad. I mean, who's just going to get flat out cut and not be around?
Well, I don't think practice squad should count.
Well, he just said it did.
No. He said total number of draft choices that make the team, including injured players. because they're going to be on the roster.
So we're not counting practice squad, but we are counting injured players?
Well, I kind of think you should.
The then I would say under
players are on the roster.
I would count under 9.5. No, they're not.
They are, though. Practice squad's not a member of your team. They're free agents. They are in no way your property. Injured players remain your property.
Yeah, but they're not on your team, though.
But they're on your roster. They're part
well,
of your team.
Well, I redid my answer. Under 9.5 if we're not counting.
Under 9.5. I think it's right at 9. I think that's a good number. Because even if Ingram makes it, you got the two injured guys, that puts you at 9. Unless they stash somebody.
To me, the team is the active 53-man roster. I know to Bill, it's everybody. It's more like 65.
I like that game, Gherkin, but I like the pictures better.
I loved the game. The game was fun.
I loved the pictures. Shows the difference between me and Paul. Leatherhead Perillo's worried about...
Well, I saw the pictures, my friend.
You know what? Adam in Charlotte, North Carolina. I have been watching Hard Knocks. This week, the Bengals will be training for last week's Patriots game. I find it interesting how teams prepare for us. Some listeners of this may want to tune in. I will be trying to tune in. When's that on?
Tomorrow night.
Wednesday night.
I don't think you're going to see a whole lot of preparing for the Patriots in that. I could be wrong, but do you think? I think the more interesting stuff will be on the sideline of the game.
Could be, especially when Chad Johnson kicks and some of that stuff.
Yeah.
First of all, Chad Johnson's entertaining.
Am I wrong here? Wouldn't it be the stuff that would be the game that happened last Thursday will be shown Wednesday night, I would think.
I have no idea. I don't know the timetable on those. I would never be a Pat's Hard Knocks, and I wouldn't want others to see our secrets. But, man, I sure would love to be the one guy who had a copy of that. The only way that would work is if someone made it an invisible camera. I think BB sees reporters' cameras and puts up this wall, like the CPU is running, but his emotion is on screensaver. It's kind of funny. That's a good description of Bill Belichick. Not that I
so ridiculous.
A little bit.
I don't think there's any chance that Bill would ever do Hard Knocks, but I also don't think there's a lot of secrets to be revealed on that. I think the part of that that I think that I would avoid at all costs if I were a coach is just the public nature of like cuts and frank discussions on a player. I don't think you're hearing a lot of game plan talk. Do you?
Well, that's all you got. Not that I blame him for disliking the media. Most of the media folks create stories instead of reporting them. Not you guys, of course.
PFW and friends.
That's right. We don't do anything.
If BB was given a choice of not having to do press conferences or interviews anymore, what would he do? Not do press conferences and interviews anymore.
Okay. Absolutely.
I know some fat coaches in northern smoky, trashy Jersey would love to get up and talk smack every day. That sounds like a shot at Rob Ryan. Not so veiled either, Paul Perillo.
And I'm not so sure.
I mean Rex.
I'm not so sure.
Well, Rob would, too, if he could ever get a head coaching gig.
But I don't think Bill would want any part of that if he didn't have to do it.
It's a good question coming in from Brian Zakowski in Colorado. Subject, Vernon Golston. Andy, have you come off your man love for Golston? A little bit. The guy continues to show nothing on the field that would make him worthy of where he was taken in the draft. Do you think he was more a Mangini or Tannenbaum pick? Irrespective of the team he inherited, does Mangini have what it takes to be a head coach? No. Also, venture a guess as to how successful McDaniels will be. From what you guys experienced in the time McDaniels was around the team, what do you think his strengths and weaknesses are, and have they shown up in his handling of the Broncos to date? Living in Colorado, I find myself talking Broncos fans off the ledge. I have sort of cut ties with Golston. I haven't seen much to like from him. I watched a little bit last night and didn't see much, and the perception that the announcers gave was that he hasn't done much. I was really looking for him to have a big breakout under Ryan, and so far it doesn't look like that's going to be the case. So,
well, I did hear them talking about him, saying how important it was for him to do some stuff and to make some plays, and they were looking for him to do more. So I would think it's not looking very good if he hasn't flashed in camp yet with a second coaching staff.
Right,
I would think that that's a bad sign. But you know, hey. What are you going to do? I mean,
this bus happened. I really like Josh McDaniels. I thought leaving here he was going to be a star of a head coach. I still believe someday he'll be a star of a head coach. He's young enough so that even if Denver is a flat-out failure, I think he'll get a second chance. I mean, if Eric Mangini got a second chance and as quickly as he did after kind of his tenure with the Jets, I don't really think it matters what Josh McDaniels does. I think barring any severe scandal, at some point he'll get a second time through, and I think he'll be better that time because I don't think he's done a very good job so far.
But don't you think that if he fails, the big part of him failing is going to probably be based on what's already happened,
mm-hmm.
the lack of trust that the mm-hmm. players seem to have developed for him. And if this kind of continues and these kinds of things continue to be issues with him in Denver, do you think you don't see a scenario where they say, you know what, he's
no.
not head coaching timber?
Mm-mm.
No? So you just think everybody gets a second chance,
no matter how badly you flame out? I think virtually everybody gets a second chance.
I think he's got to be careful. I think he's going to be all right because I think the guy has I think he's very well prepared. I think he's a smart guy. And I think he's off to a rocky start with his personnel interaction, but I think that he can very quickly, I think he can get past that. And I think he will succeed in Denver to an extent. Now, how well he's able to do, I don't know. But if he flames out and he's going 3-13 and the team is hating him, I'm not sure he gets another chance.
Yeah, I think he'll get another chance. It'll probably be after, obviously, he goes back as a coordinator for a couple of years and succeeds there. I think he's going to be a good football coach. I think he needs to learn at times to go with his own beliefs, his own instincts, maybe some of the things he learned from his dad, a longtime high school head coach. I think right now his biggest mistake is he's trying to copy the Patriots way, and I don't think he can copy it because he's not Bill Belichick. The players that are in his system don't have Super Bowl rings. They don't have leaders like Tom Brady around. I think it's just a whole different dynamic, and he kind of tried to put a round peg into a square hole so far. Sooner or later he'll learn. Find a round hole, Paul. Right?
I hear you.
But I think he's going to be successful. Tom Brady does, too. He was actually asked about that today.
I think he's going to be successful. I do. I think he'll be okay.
I don't think he's going to be okay in Denver. I think the end has already been written there.
Well, I think if that happens, and you're right about that, I'm not sure he gets another shot. If he flames out that badly, where it's not about his coaching, it's about his ability to lead, I'm not sure that another owner is going to line up.
Another sucker will be born? I mean, if Randy Lerner was born, there's got to be another
sucker out
there.
I don't think Mangini flamed out like this.
Oh, I do. All the talk of how Brett Favre had his own meeting room and how, you know, there were different rules for different
people. Do you think Mangini wanted that?
Yeah. I think Mangini was the head of that.
I don't think he wanted any part of that. I don't think he wanted him at all.
I'm excited.
I think that was jammed down his throat.
Named his kid after him.
I think that was jammed down his throat.
So his wife made him name the kid after him?
I don't care about his kid. I'm talking about his coach. He won 10 games his first year. He had a bad year his second year, and they were in position to do something his third year, and the quarterback crapped out on him.
I think he wanted him.
I don't think he wanted any part of him. I really don't.
Mangini made the Brett Favre rules there, and he died.
And I don't think that the crapping out in New York was anything like this situation in Denver where the entire team seems to be mutiny before he's even coached a game.
Well, the timing is obviously different. I mean, the timing went like this in New York. They hated Mangini when he came in. He won some games. He got bigger than he should have been, and then they hated him when he went out. He had a short span of where everybody loved him in the middle.
I didn't really see it that way, but you might be right.
They hated him when he got there.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, it was absolutely chaos.
But then he won.
He just didn't trade the franchise quarterback away and do it in such.
Oh, yeah. No, I agree with you at the beginning. I didn't see the end being the way you did. I saw more people blaming Favre than Mangini last year.
All the comments I read about how Mangini
Thomas Jones and all those guys ripping.
I think they hated
Mangini. The defensive back there, who was Kerry Rhodes.
I think he lost all respect from his players, and a lot of it had to do with Favre.
I agree, and I think that's because he didn't want him. And then he kowtowed to him.
I think you're giving him an excuse. And
I think he kowtowed to him, and they didn't like it. But I don't think they hated Mangini for it. I think they just didn't like the situation.
I think you're giving him a free pass. But Kabir from Columbus, Ohio, just curious on your take on which team poses a threat to the Pats this year, taking in consideration the performances of the preseason so far. Paul, I'll let you handle that one. You're a big preseason observer.
Based on that criteria, none, because I don't think the preseason means one lick. For any team.
I watched last night, and they showed a highlight of a Flacco throw, and it was a tremendous throw to Todd Heap coming across the field, and he wasn't open. He threw the ball to a spot. Heap got to the spot and made the catch, and I was like, wow, that's a great throw. He's great. And then they show Flacco, 4 of 12, and I'm thinking,
he was 8
they
for
showed
18.
Me one of the four throws that he had completed.
He was 8 for
they
18
butt-hooked me.
In that game, too, and I did see probably the best stretch that he had. Late in the first half, he looked really, really good. But statistically, he wasn't real good. I just don't think you can learn anything from the preseason. I don't. I think that, you know, even if you're out there playing against the other team's ones, even if, you know, you're simulating some sort of game type situation, regular season type situation, it's just not the same. You know, it's just not the same. There's all kinds of stuff that can go differently. Game plans. You know, Bill always talks about you don't want to get in a position where you're running a play that you know can't be successful against the defense, but you're not necessarily game planning to exploit the other team's weaknesses. Do you know what I'm saying? I think that happens throughout the league in the preseason. I don't think there's a lot to be learned from it. Do you feel like there's much to be learned, Andy? I mean, am I wrong on that?
No. Programming note, Eric Scalavino is on the field as we speak, observing practice, most likely observing stretching, actually, and a little pre-practice warm-ups.
It'll be interesting to see if any of the guys who've missed practices the last couple of days.
He'll be in here at 1:30 approximately to give us a live update coming right off the practice fields with all the information that he gleaned from practice. Hopefully some of it will be interesting and useful.
Generally,
with Eric, it's not.
How is he going to come in here and deliver it in any kind of a useful fashion?
Certainly not in an entertaining fashion. Guy doesn't have an entertaining bone in his body.
Useful.
Except for when he was a comedian, just like Jerry Springer.
No, stop telling lies. You are an habitual liar.
Steve from Arlington checking
such
in.
Such an idiot.
First-time emailer, and he's going to Thursday's game, which is unfortunate for him because the game is Friday, right?
Absolutely.
Sorry, Steve. You might want to check those tickets because if they say Thursday, dude got hosed.
He's in Arlington, Virginia?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's games Friday.
I'm a first-time emailer, and I've been listening to the show for about a year now. A lot of those have been popping up lately. You notice that? First-time emailer, I've been listening for a year or so.
We continue to grow as a show
and
an organization.
Your gut.
I knew that was coming.
I was wondering how you were going to tiptoe through that to try to avoid the shot that was coming.
That's what she said.
After the loss
in
the
game, as a show
that shall not be named, I made it a point not to put in so much of my time reading up on the Patriots and watching Patriots Today on a daily basis. It was too much of a heartbreaker.
That loss to the Dolphins last year wasn't that bad.
After that dreadful February day in 08, I didn't visit Patriots.com until around this time last year. It was then that I realized I'm unable to watch Patriots Today or any videos at my current job.
Wow.
Oh. But it's also when I discovered you clowns. Well, we're way better than B-Low anyway. You were wasting your time and bandwidth back then.
But I like that, you clowns.
Needless to say, I've listened to every show since, and I probably speak for many of the listeners when I say you guys sure do provide entertainment for us at our mind-numbing office jobs, not only during football season, but during the entire off-season as well. Unfortunately, we're not providing that today because these two-man shows, they're too much nail-driven.
They stunt the creativity.
Too much football. Not enough time for screwing around. We need a third.
And we honestly, you know, that...
Doc, do you want to be the third?
You know those stupid tangents that we go on, you know, soap in a slot and stuff like that? I'd love to be able to tell you that we talk about this stuff and we say, you know what, that'll be funny for the show.
Oh, hell no.
It never happens. It has to just...
We're unscripted.
It's organic.
And out of bounds.
Right?
TFW in progress. That's our slogan, unscripted and out of bounds.
No, it's... Online and out of bounds.
Online and out of bounds. And unscripted, too. I'm unable to listen to the show live, but I listen to the podcast as soon as it's posted on Patriots.com. Hopefully that will be even sooner now because Chris Ferreira has an intern who is very talented, is a fan of the show.
Who, by the way, is already,
we're hoping,
already light years ahead of Chris Ferreira.
Well, we're hoping he's going to be Chris Ferreira's replacement, not his intern.
Well, I think, isn't that a foregone
and
conclusion?
And Chris Ferreira seems to be on board. He actually said, I'd love to be laid off. So it's, I don't know what's going through the guy's mind, but, you know, he wants to spend a little more time at home with Hitler.
So for
and
those
the children
of you who, wow, that was harsh for you. But
my question is
for
regarding,
those of you that are looking for the end of the Chris Ferreira era, I think it's close.
The writing's on the wall.
It's close.
You know, those
the
of
over,
you that thought
the
Ron under Brace
is Thanksgiving
was the replacement for Vince Wilfork, well, this guy who I just talked to and forgot his name is the replacement for Chris Ferreira. He'll listen and take that as a shot, probably. But sorry, I'll ask you your name when I come back upstairs. It's not Craig, is it? That's the other
one.
No,
that's the
that
other
cube
one.
I don't know. Anybody know? Doc, you met him? All right. I don't know. He's
Craig
a good
is,
guy, though.
Craig is ding, right?
My question is regarding this week's preseason game against the Redskins, to which I have phony tickets. I'll be going to... oh, he says Friday's game down in the text. Okay, he's okay. And I wanted to get an idea on how the third preseason game compares to the other two preseason games.
Andy, I've heard you're a big fan of that.
I've heard a few times that this is the most important game in the preseason for the Patriots and all teams. Can you guys elaborate on why that is? Well, generally speaking, the starters play more in this game, often into the second half, simulating a real game where you'd cool down, come out of halftime, all that. There's generally a little bit more, not game planning, but preparation. They've broken camp. As Brady said, they have more time to watch film, look at some film from the other team, work on their own mistakes. There is just a more heightened importance on some level put on the game, although not the outcome, but just the preparation for it. And, you know, they kind of use it as a simulation of the week leading up to a regular season game. So you'll see some of that. But that's not to say there's all the game planning of, well, this is what the Redskins do on third and short, so this is what we're going to run. It's more just the act of preparing for a game in a way that you would prepare for a real game.
Yeah, I agree.
I moved here from Mansfield, Mass. Back in the 90s, so I've been a Pats fan since day one. Keep up all the great work and have a great time while you're in the nation's capital this weekend. Steve from Arlington. We will have a great time. We don't know what we're doing because, first, we don't have an itinerary yet. And
So even you guys don't have the itinerary yet?
No.
Because you know how I very rarely get one at all, so I just assume that you guys already had the information.
Breaking news from Adam Schefter. Denver and New England at it again. Paul Perillo, change your roster story.
Oh, good.
According to the reports, the Broncos acquire offensive, well, it says tackle, but offensive lineman Russ Hochstein from the Patriots for a late round 2010 pick.
Hmm.
So maybe my boy Billy Yates will make the team. I was worried about him. I just saw Russ in the locker room. They make these trades late, huh? They really are just like a work in progress. Russ was getting ready to go out to practice. He may have been called off the practice field to be traded. Second Patriot in a two-week span. What do you think of it, Paul Perillo? Breaking news?
I'm a little surprised, to be honest with you. I thought Hochstein was one of those guys that they really felt comfortable with. But we did, and I think, Andy, you were the one that brought this up a couple of weeks ago. You know, when you get to the stage as a veteran and you're a backup, and you're 6, 7, 8, 9 years, and now you're not, you know, you're a backup, but you're making veteran minimum money, sometimes it's not as cost-effective as it might be. Even though he could play all three of those spots, you can get a guy like Ryan Wendell, who's done a lot of all three of that, you know, the center and the two guard spots. In training camp, maybe it opens the door for a guy like that. Maybe it opens the door for a guy like Billy Yates. Maybe they only keep 8 linemen. I don't know. Right now I had 9 linemen, and I had Russ Hochstein as one of them. And maybe.
My boy, Rob Ninkovich, makes the team because you got to have a backup long snapper. And Russ Hochstein was your backup long snapper. Ninko. Yeah? Yeah?
He's got a shot.
Special teamer, Ninko. Eric Alexander's cut. Ninko makes it. You know he can play inside and out, right? Played inside for Miami last year.
Look.
Backup long snapper, inside, outside, and special teams. Ninko has Patriots written all over him. Paul, fix your roster projection. It's wrong.
It ain't an easy.
Get rid of Hochstein and add Ninko.
Well, yes, I would get rid of Hochstein. Thank you.
It'd be embarrassing if you went to print and had Hochstein making the team when he was traded 5 days earlier.
Right. I will be getting rid of him.
Who's this from? Doesn't say. It's about the secondary. Hey, guys, love what you do. Listen to you every week. Probably will stop after this week with me hosting. I was just wondering, what are your thoughts on the Patriots secondary this year, and how good do you think they'll be? I know these questions have popped up before, but watching every year is painful. Popped up before, but watching them every year is painful. Do you think they will have good or poor coverage this year? Because in the past, they just flat out sucked in coverage.
Wow. I mean, every year?
I don't think they've always sucked. Recently, they've been a little sucky.
I mean, the last 2 years, I mean, last year especially, but I think it'll be okay. I think that they've made some improvements. I think some of the younger guys, I think, are upgrades over some of the veterans that they've had in recent years, guys like Lewis Sanders, Jason Webster last year, for example. I think a guy like Jonathan Wilhite is better than those guys already. I think Darius Butler has the potential. Terrence Wheatley, we haven't seen a lot of. He has the potential. But I like the veterans that they brought in this year, in Bodden and Springs, I think are better than the guys they've brought in recent seasons. So I think it will be improved. Now, does that make it good? I don't know.
I don't know, Paul.
There's going to be some growing pains. I think we've talked about this every show. I think the defense will be a lot better about halfway through the season than it will be on opening day.
I agree. I think they're going to be very good post-Thanksgiving as a defense when they all come together and my man Ninkovich is on the field pressuring quarterbacks. Now, Paul, thoughts on Brewski? This is from our good friend Simonelli Christian. What's up, guys?
Chris with a T-I-A-N.
Breaking news out of Foxborough. Eric Scalavino here to let us know, was Russ Hochstein indeed carted off the field to be traded, or was he not out there?
He was never out there.
Because he was putting his pads on in the locker room, I saw him.
Did you know he was traded?
We found out when we were out there, yeah.
Who's we?
Were you informed by the
media corps?
Were you informed by the media relations staff?
Negative. We were in
somebody got a Schefter tweet
from someone got a tweet, yes. So he was not out there.
This Eric Scalavino practice report brought to you by Scalavino.com, your one stop shopping for overpriced, long awaited artwork.
That's why you can't do voiceovers.
You actually have.
I would have a chance to do it a couple times.
You actually have some. You actually have some long-awaited, overdue artwork waiting in your inbox when you get back to your desk. Speaking of which, nice little tease for you. Other than Hochstein, no, no, you'll see when you get there.
I'm intrigued.
Other than Hochstein, some good news on the returning front. Paris Lennon was back out there,
and then he practiced
as
as hard as he could.
Rookie Brian Hoyer, who'd been missing some time since the Cincy game, he
shook
was back
the cobwebs
out there.
Free from
shook
his
him
head.
Off. Yep. Dan Connolly was back out there, and Will Hyde is still wearing his red jersey.
Okay.
On a down note, Wes Welker was not there, although he was seen in the locker room today as well. Ron Brace, same thing, not out there.
Was seen in the locker room.
Was seen in the locker room.
Big dude, you know, Eric.
A very big dude, I know.
Andy just found out that he's big.
Oh, and I saw your guy Chris Taylor in the locker room. And you're right.
The with trap the, thing?
Oh,
he's permanently shrugging.
Yeah.
It's amazing. You're walking from behind. It looks like he's like making a shrug, but then he turns around and he looks kind of normal from the front. It's strange traps on that dude.
And some question as to what time practice started. There was a little bit of confusion. We were all out there on time.
With the players or the media?
No, with the media. But we ended up getting about a full 20 minutes of practice time.
Saw more than stretching?
Yeah, we saw more than stretching and more than one drill. Well, just drills.
Were they running the Wildcat?
No, not that kind of stuff, no. But when we heard the bell, when it's usually time to go, and we hear the horn, we all started to turn to walk, and Stacey's like, no, one more period, guys.
Wrong
and we're like,
horn,
wow,
fool.
Okay. Very light on the wide receiver department today, though, with Welker not being there. It just made it look like such a smaller group. There's only like,
that little guy being missing?
Sorry,
made the difference.
Sorry, Ventrone was also not there.
Oh, Bubba.
Missed that one.
Bubba get shaken up?
Don't know.
Was Bubba there yesterday?
Bubba was there yesterday. So that was a little bit of a surprise.
Anything else you want to
Falk
know?
And Morris remain out. Sean Springs remain out. Your guy Tank Williams, or actually Fred's guy, not there today. Edelman remains out. A little bit of a concern there. He did look like he got shaken up pretty well in that Cincy game, though.
Mm-hmm.
We mentioned the Hoker. And Sean Crable, again, out. So, not good news for him. But good news for Paris Lennon, I think.
Then Paris Lennon.
Hopefully he can do something.
I think he might be in a last-ditch effort to try to steal a roster spot with this team.
Oh, yeah.
So, he better do something.
And did you read his quotes at all yesterday?
No.
There seemed to be a hint of desperation.
Well, I think
you can see it on his face.
He's a veteran. He's a smart guy. He knows what's going on.
Yeah, he says no matter how many reps I get in the classroom, I can't replace. I'm behind. I can't replace those. And
it's not like
I need to get on
the
field.
Few reps he had. He was wowing. He was under wowing.
Real quick before we go on,
under wowing.
One last note from practice. They did a second time this preseason. They did the rookie hose down hazing.
Oh, really?
In the back corner. Of the practice field, so
isn't that what they say when there's a drive by on a prostitute corner?
Hose down.
So did you get a good view of that? Because there weren't a lot of people.
It's in that same far corner of the practice.
Scotty field. O'Brien do it again?
Didn't see him do it though. No, it was just the players this time. They threw the ball out there. You had to dive and try to recover the fumble and all that. Good day to do it though, because it's pretty hot out there.
I mean, it was hot.
It was hot.
That's interesting. So, have they done it?
But they haven't done the haircuts yet.
Yeah,
which is a little surprising. I think at this point.
Maybe the hotel Thursday night.
And national televised game.
Yeah,
could
there's
be a good
chance
time to
you
debut
see some
it.
Haircuts this
yeah.
week.
Yep.
Have they done the hosing multiple times?
I don't remember that, but I remember seeing haircuts before now in the past.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely late. But I'm wondering if it has to do with road games or anything, if
might
there's
be.
Any timing involved there, maybe a different schedule.
Might be.
So interesting. Let's get back to this Russ Hochstein trade,
sure.
Paul. What do you make of it?
Well,
is this my theory?
I think
they gave away some draft picks. They need to reacquire some of them. They traded a 5 for Alex Smith, which may or may not pan out.
It might have something to do with
that. A 3 and a 5 for Derek Burgess may or may not pan out.
But I think our other theory is probably a bigger line of thinking in that they probably feel like they have potential backups with the same kind of versatility for less money.
My guy, Ryan Wendell, maybe.
Ryan Wendell.
Young guy. Get him in now. You got him for, if he's Hochstein, if he is that guy, now you got him for like 5 years as your back up
interior
guy.
And I'm not even talking, you know, like they have a fourth round pick in Ornberger that, you know, I'm not really sure exactly where he fits in. I think he probably does have some versatility to play center and guard based on his.
Small.
But he hasn't really been on the field a whole lot, and it's a rookie, so you don't know exactly what you're going to get. But Wendell was here a whole year, don't forget, on a practice squad.
Yep.
And they probably have a pretty good idea of what he can do to fill in.
And where's he from?
Wendell?
Fresno State.
Fresno State.
Pat Which Hill is connection. Basically like 4 years of being on the practice squad in
right.
Pat Hill's
right.
system.
So exactly. I think they probably look at that as, you know, maybe what, $500,000 in savings?
Oh, yeah.
So
and 300,000 up to $8 and change for Hoker.
I mean, that's a pretty good savings.
And anybody who was worried about him being, you know, taking over the fullback role and those short yardage, we've seen David Thomas doing that pretty well, I think, in the two games so far this preseason. So that might not be too much of a concern either as far as filling that spot without Hoker there. So
yeah. I think this could be the first of maybe a couple more of these.
This is one of those trades that, look, when you don't know – you can't just say, well, it's not surprising. I didn't, you know, I saw it coming or whatever. But it's not an overly stunning move.
No.
You know, same with Lee Kevin Smith. You could kind of see the writing on the wall that probably wasn't going to have a huge role if he was going to make the team. Hochstein, I clearly thought, would make the team. But I'm not stunned at all that they would say he's a backup guy who's now getting close to $1 million as a veteran minimum guy. We could probably save some money and get someone to be able to play three interior spots.
I guess you could say it's not surprising that they made the trade with Denver either, because Josh knows this guy well enough and knows what he's getting. But
if you're going to acquire like a Jag backup, no offense to Russ,
you want
a Jag backup, you know.
Right. How many draft picks, though, does Denver have? They seem to be doing a lot of moves this offseason, making trades here and there, acquiring players left and right. It just seems to me that's...
Well, they did acquire a ton of draft picks from Chicago in that deal,
four of them, right? Big important ones.
That's true.
These are
that's true.
Useless ones they're trading away when you have extra up high like that.
That's good. Yep.
Thanks.
But it's interesting. It'll be interesting to see if there are a couple more of these. You know, we posed the Ben Watson, the Jarvis Greens,
All the ones I put out there haven't happened. But who knows?
You know, maybe it means the guys we thought were on the bubble will make it and they push the other guys out into the trade scenario that we're seeing now.
Good news. Now you can update
Doesn't help me out that much, though. He was one of the guys I felt pretty confident with.
Okay, we now have an email on Brett Favre. We always love those, especially Eric.
Just
it's from Tracy in Vegas. She sounds hot. She's from Vegas. Don't you assume she's hot?
Brett Favre.
Tracy's kind of a hot name, too.
Sure.
One comment on Favre's signing. By the way, Tracy, send photos. I keep hearing that Favre is committed, quote-unquote, to the team and all that, but I guess I heard his response in a press conference to the question about why he's coming back differently. He said that he didn't want to not play and wonder what if. That doesn't sound like someone who's committed. It sounds like someone who's hedging his bets. You want to handle this one, Eric?
I think Favre's been hedging his bets for the last few years, ever since he had that little crybaby session on national television when he was with the Packers. I forgot who they played, but it was like the last game of the year, maybe 4 or 5 years ago.
He said, I'm not really ready to
do
this.
He started bowling on the field, and then, you know, I think he's been hedging ever since then, and that's part of the reason why people are annoyed with him, is because he's not coming out and
hedging.
Saying, look.
Instead of trimming his hedges, which he should be doing, he's
exactly,
retired.
Exactly.
Or his wife's.
So, yeah, I mean, this whole scenario, this whole offseason has been a hedged bet for him. You know, I'm going to come back. I'm not going to come back. I'm going to have the surgery. Oh, no, it's working. It's not. I'm going to go with the Vikings. I'm not. I don't know. The camp has started. Now it's over. I'm going to. It's nonsense. And I think, you know, obviously it was only one game, and he's only had 2 days to practice. But he looked horrible in his first game back. And I think
you were happy.
I was happy, and I think that's what Minnesota fans can be used to seeing this year.
Instant reply from Tracy. By the way, I am hot.
Oh, good.
Well,
send
then,
pictures.
Tracy, do send photos.
Well, speaking of photos, Doc, did you print out the photos that somebody sent earlier
today?
Pretty good, huh?
The gherkin man got my pickle moving, if you know what I'm saying. Hey, ho!
And he's working his gherkin.
Simonelli Christian back again. What's
Chris
up, guys?
T-A-N.
What do the both of you think, and it is the both of us now, it's just a different both, because
Paul's
out
of
the fat one left and the
Where
skinny one
go?
Came in. About Brewski contributing this year. I know he's been injured this camp and has said, as I read in the Herald today, that Mayo is the de facto leader on D. I can't see him getting cut, but I can see him retiring. That stiff arm he received the other night had me thinking of John Lynch getting torched on the kickoff return last year against the Bucks. I know depth is an issue with only Lennon, who's also been hurt, and Guyton as the only other options at inside linebacker. At this point, Paul, I need to update you. Tracy replied, she is hot, she says.
Oh, good.
at this point, I think if Brewski sees any extended playing time this year, that it's a bad thing for the D. I just hate seeing a guy hang on.
Well, he did a little impromptu session in the last 5 minutes of the locker room period today, got in on that, and he was asked if
Andy and Paul missed that.
We were at the other.
You were at the other end of the locker room, though. I mean, that's understandable. And there's all those blue things, those temporary lockers in between, so you couldn't have possibly.
Those really get in the way.
They do. I know.
Sorry to say it for the 20-plus guys that will be out of work, but I'll be glad when those lockers are gone.
Absolutely. But he was asked directly today, does it feel odd that
you're... he's the big fullback, too. Sorry, go ahead.
Who's that, what?
Hoker.
Yeah.
What about that?
Did I just not make that point? Would you have a Fred Kirsch moment there?
Wow. It's hard when you're in this chair. You sit a show in this chair, and then you come talk to me.
I have sat in that chair. Those headphones don't work.
Yeah,
right?
These headphones are in and out. All right, go ahead.
With
your useless.
Anyway, he was asked if it feels weird to be running with the twos. And he gave an answer that I knew Paul would have loved. You know, I've played with every unit in my career. And so he was basically saying,
that doesn't really translate over the radio.
I know.
When you're making hand and face gestures.
Well,
that pause is implied.
Brewski has a way of saying something when he's somewhat annoyed by a question without coming out and saying he's annoyed.
Yeah.
And he has kind of a gesture that he makes with his hands, and he kind of
throws
his neck out and puts his face forward.
Mike Parenti had a similar one.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's what Eric's trying to convey. But it's really strange. I mean, and he does it constantly. He does it all the time. And you can always tell when there's a question that sort of rubbed him the wrong way.
I think he sees the handwriting on the wall.
Well, he has said,
and he's
basically the torch has been passed.
Yes.
He understands the situation. I think it helps him to be able to do it to a guy he truly seems to respect and likes the way he's handled himself as a rookie, as a hard worker, as all that crap. It makes it easier.
And it's
not Monty Beisel sliding into a slot. It's a potential superstar middle linebacker.
And it's a reciprocal relationship.
Right.
Mayo, every time he's asked, goes on and on about how great
Brewski
is.
Mayo's a smart kid. I think Mayo's a smart kid. I think he really recognizes and respects the past. And he's smart enough not to. Plus, you'd have to be dumb if you haven't figured out in a year plus here in New England what Teddy Brewski means to the people of this community.
Mm-hmm. But the final question, as Simonelli Christian asked, is there any chance Teddy Brewski is not a member of this team, regardless of whether it's cut, retires, whatever, this season?
I think there's a chance, but it's
a
very slim one. 25%.
I'd say slimmer than that.
In terms of cut, I think 0%. In terms of retirement, I would hold out a 5% chance.
I'd put it there, maybe below that. I don't even think Bill would want him to retire at this point. I don't think he has enough depth.
They don't have enough depth.
And I still think if you compare, it's kind of like my Ben Watson thing. If you compare Ben Watson to what he was supposed to be, then cut him because he's nowhere near what he's supposed to be. If you compare Teddy Brewski to the guy who used to, they were all pick six and big plays and fumbles, okay, then cut him because he's not that guy. But how about we just compare him to the fourth inside linebacker on the roster?
Mm-hmm.
Then I want him. Yeah. Because he knows the defense better than anyone.
Right.
So he can be that mentor role. But more often than not, I think he'll make that tackle. And as I said somewhere, it might be 6 yards downfield, but a tackle 6 yards downfield is
better
you live to fight another play.
Yeah. Better than 20.
Better than 45,
I'll take
like
it.
We saw the other day.
I got my guy Mayo, who I'm hoping is going to be making plays at or near the line of scrimmage and change some games.
Right.
So I still think Teddy Brewski is one of the best 53 on the roster. He's just not as high on that list as he once was.
Even if they play more 4-3 than they have in the past, there's still not enough depth at that position.
Right.
And if they go back to playing 3-4,
I mean, the
even
other
half
guys
the time, they're going to need two linebackers.
Gary Guyton, I'm not sold, is a 3-4 inside linebacker. And I think in a 4-3, he'd be better suited. He'd have a little more protection. He could use his speed better. And Paris Lennon is a huge question mark. He's a guy with a decent bio from time with the worst team in football.
Yeah.
That's all he is.
Yeah.
He's a guy that literally is on paper right now. Nothing more.
And I don't really foresee Brewski having a huge role, barring injuries.
Right.
You know, I mean, I don't see
that.
No,
it's occasional early downs
right.
and emergencies.
And I think with his experience, he clearly, you know, as Eric and Andy pointed out with the relationship with Mayo, he clearly doesn't have a problem with it.
Right. He's
you know?
Fine with the role.
So I think that makes him very helpful to lean on in the locker room.
More of a role. Brewski this year or Troy Brown, whatever, 2 years ago?
Brewski.
Right.
Brewski, because I think
he'll
be around.
It's the role.
It.
I mean, at least he can still fill something. It's hard to be. Troy Brown had nothing because there was no easy way to kind of fill in and be, you know, there was no role there for him to have. I think Brewski, there's still a role there.
Plus, Brown was, he was in the locker room and he was around the team, but he was on PUP,
right.
I believe. For
coming off the knee injury, he was on PUP.
So, Brewski, assuming he stays healthy, will be there on the field and on the sideline. So, if things need to happen quickly as far as giving advice or, you know, reading how a play is developing or how a, you know, a scheme that the offense is doing, he can do that, whereas Brown wasn't really around enough to be able to do that.
Alexander Quezada Garcia Maritano. You killed my father, now I'm here to kill you.
From Bogota?
I don't know. No, Bogota. That's... Oh.
You know I don't speak Spanish. In English, please.
I do. Un pero. No, un poco.
What's that?
Poco.
Pero is a dog.
Un butt?
Or another butt. Eric likes an un butt. hey, guys, about the Russ Hochstein trade. He used to fill in as an extra tight end in big, quote-unquote, goal line packages or a fullback, and I was kind of thinking he would fill the same role this year. Having said that, what's up with our fullback position now? Only David Thomas at it? Well, I think Thomas is one of the guys. If I'm not mistaken, Paul, Ryan Wendell was also playing some fullback. Why are you looking at me like that?
Think you caught him off guard there?
No, I believe you are correct.
Okay.
Oh, I know where you're. Yeah, I know where you're going.
I just don't believe that was common knowledge.
Yeah.
Ixnay on the Endel way. Sorry about that, Alexander. We know nothing about the fullback position. Next email, 2 weeks and counting, comes in from Bradley Tangway. Are we familiar with that name?
Yeah, Gary's brother.
It is?
He said that's so, such a strange
Yeah, kicking Gary's stones if he was listening to our show as opposed to his brother, no? Because his brother is on the air from 10 to 2 in Boston.
That's correct.
On the Hub, which, by the way, Paul Perillo, you'll be 6 p.m.-ish, 6:30 p.m.-ish Friday on the Hub's pregame show?
I don't know. If I can get to Washington, maybe. I don't have an itinerary.
I don't think you are.
Hey, guys. Love the Brett Favre crying sound effect.
Wait for it.
No, really, wait for it. He stinks back there.
We are. We're still waiting
Crickets.
For it. And waiting.
Wow. Right on cue. I missed what the Pats got from Perfect. Denver in the trade. Could you repeat that deal? It was a late-round pick. I don't really believe it was specified.
I don't think it was specified.
Late-round pick.
My question this week is the weekly update on Terrence Nunn. Now that DeVry is gone and maybe Watson or Smith, and given his special teams abilities, is Terrence inching his way closer to the 53-man roster? He seems to make solid catches every week. It is great listening to you guys each week. Grew up in Maine. Did Gary Tangway grow up in Maine?
Yes, he did.
Oh, man.
Oh, wow. Perhaps a
But I've been in Maryland for 20 years now and love listening to you guys talk real football, unafraid of telling the truth. That's right. We're afraid of no one.
Where do I get Tanger tonight?
Wow.
His brother's listening to us.
What's his name? Bradley? The emailer?
Yeah, Bradley Tangway. He must go by Brad. Bradley's kind of dorky. Terrence Nunn had a good game last week, but I don't think he's inched any closer to making the roster.
No, and I don't think tight ends really have a lot to do with that either. But
I think Nunn has done everything. Made a case for himself to at least be on the practice
squad.
Oh, yeah,
practice squad. He's a lock.
Nunn has done everything you can do. I think he's going to get caught up in a numbers game.
I see him at least on the practice squad, though.
Yes.
Yeah, I think he's a practice squad guy.
In our instant feedback segment, Alexander Quezada Garcia Maritano is from Panama City, Panama.
Oh, okay.
Eric, you were questioning where he was from.
Yep.
A funny Gary Tangway story while we're on the Tangway family with Bradley. Apparently yesterday they played Guns N' Roses, Paradise City, as one of their ins and outs. And Zolak goes, hey, Gary, you know this song? Because apparently Gary doesn't know a lot of songs. And he goes, yeah, that's that Panama City.
Gary, playing the role of Fred.
Hope that wasn't in like, confidence. I hope you weren't
interesting connection with our last emailer
yeah,
there.
Yeah, that's what I just said. Now who's not listening? Bradley. Dan in Charlottesville, Virginia. Hey, Paul and Andy. Good call. Ignore Eric. We try to.
Screw you.
I'll be at the game in D.C. on Friday night, and I'm eager to see what all the buzz about Edelman is about. Well, I wouldn't.
You might not get to see him.
Is he the real deal? In your opinion, will Edelman be better, worse, or just about the same level of player as another former Kent State QB wide receiver, Josh Cribbs? He'll be worse to start. Josh Cribbs is very good.
Yeah.
He was very good the other night. He returned one recently, the other night.
I didn't see what he's done this preseason,
but I mean,
but
the
worse.
Guy's been a Pro Bowl special teamer, both as a returner and as a gunner. Edelman needs to show me something before I say he's going to be a Pro Bowler.
As an aside, do you know what kind of offense Kent State ran under Edelman as quarterback?
No.
Who wrote? Didn't you write the story?
Didn't you write it?
I don't know what kind. I don't remember what kind of offense he ran. No, I don't. You know, I don't know. He wasn't. I don't think he was an option quarterback.
I don't think.
No,
he was.
I don't think so.
I think he was a traditional pro style whatever.
Who ran a lot?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did he take over?
They called him an option quarterback on the radio yesterday,
I don't think he was.
I don't
think that's true.
Believe that is accurate.
But I probably should have asked. I'm not necessarily absolving myself of blame, but I was writing a story on a guy who played quarterback in college and is going to be a wide receiver in the pros, so I wasn't asking a lot of questions about, you know, what kind of arm did he have, you know?
I just didn't know if it came up when you were talking to him.
I thought it was going
to
follow up, kind of like, you know.
Did he take over for Cribbs? At quarterback, like when, because Cribbs is only like in his third, fourth year, right?
Yeah, I think there was more of a gap in between them.
Was there?
All right, while Paul looks that up, I'm going to go to TGNNJ, who's a little bit negative. Can we retire number 22? Seems whoever wears it is doomed to play corner poorly.
Asante Samuel?
I assume he means after Asante Samuel, like in the short but post-Asante Samuel era.
There's only one player who's worn it.
Does Wheatley make the roster? Yes, although that was a question Paul Perillo posed to me while working on his roster feature. And what about Will Hite?
If
Will Hite can stay healthy, I believe he's your starting left cornerback, and he's going to make some plays.
Opposite Lee Bodden.
I mean, is Wheatley not the only guy who's won 22?
Since
Samuel, can't be saying Samuel's stunk, Cody.
No.
Maybe he's taking the Fred Kirsch approach.
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering.
Ooh, Bradley Tangway update. Instant updates. I love these. I do go by Brad. I told you that was dorky, Bradley. But as far as I know, no relation to Gary Tangway. But it's nice to hear someone know how to say my name, my last name, correctly. How would you say it? Tangawai or something?
Tangay.
Brad Tangay. Did Pryor play catch? Play much last Thursday. Having to look at his stats, it was hard to tell.
He played catch.
He did.
Pre-game.
He probably warmed up a little bit,
get
the arm loose.
Right.
He did play. He came in early.
Yep.
They started 3-4, and then he came in. They played some four-man fronts with what I would consider the first unit again. So
Just like the
previous game. High-level playing
a lot
time.
Of reps, and a lot of reps with the ones and even with the early twos.
I've been a surprise. I mean, I'd be stunned now if he doesn't make the team after he was kind of an afterthought in my mind. You know, his coach told me he, you know, he's going to have to learn the nose. And I think his coach undersold me a little bit on his
which
abilities.
Is rare. Usually we get sold the other way.
Right. And I think
and
his
it's not
coach
like he was it's not like he was Ron Brace, drafted in the second round. You might
expect
he can fill in that role. Sixth round guy.
Yep.
Well, I think what the coach is really like, I think, and from talking to him a little bit after
he's
first
pretty high
game,
on himself.
But he was talking about his, you know, the coaches said, I have a really good motor. So I think that they kind of like, you know, his ability to play inside and out and really has, you know, one of those, you know, nonstop kind of guys. I think the coaches find that, you know, something worth developing.
Motor player.
Cribbs has been in the, this is
he's
his
got
fifth,
a media guy. I'm looking at him. Yeah. He's looking back this at me
is
like, are you expecting something from me?
I was trying to figure out what that meant, what you just said.
I like high motor players.
It's good to have a high motor player. I didn't really get that.
I don't like lazy guys.
This is his fifth year, Cribbs. So in 2004 was his last year at Kent State. So if Edelman redshirted, he would have been there in 2004.
And if
for
not,
his first year. If not, they never even overlapped at all.
So, but basically, he took over.
And Edelman played his last 3 years. So regardless, he didn't take over for
Cribbs.
I thought
Edelman transferred in from somewhere.
Oh, right. He
from
did.
Junior.
He did.
College,
you're right. He didn't redshirt. Right. He played right away because remember he said, I'm going to take your job, and he took his job.
You're correct. Right.
So no is the answer to the Cribbs question.
Right. Well, regardless, he didn't take over for Cribbs.
Not directly. Yeah.
Dave from Rhode Island wants to know about the linebackers. As for the linebackers, I think Bruschi will have a significant impact on the team this year. May not end up being a standout linebacker, but he will shine in certain situations when we need him most. I think he will also help the young linebackers in their role, and he will be a coach as well as a player. I wouldn't say that to Bill Belichick. He tends to bristle at those...
Coach, players have enough to worry about on their own.
Right.
Now, little things in meetings, did you see that there on the film or on the sideline? Did you notice this? But to just say a guy, oh, you know, he's going to coach Guyton and Mayo, and that's no.
Right.
He can fill in with whatever he wants to fill in with, but he needs to focus on being ready to play if he needs to play. What?
I'm just looking at this law firm thing. It's
Pulaski and Middleman.
Levaquin, I don't know how to pronounce it, some drug that people get for post-op shoulder stuff, and it says if you may have a claim if you've been prescribed this drug, and it's the 800 number is 1-800-BAD-DRUG that you call.
They don't use it on colonoscopies, do they?
I don't know.
Should I make a call?
You might want to make a call.
They showed a guy in a sling, and they said rotator cuff surgery and stuff like that.
But I had shoulder surgery a few years ago.
Bruschi, though.
If I were you, I'd go with Pulaski because you want to cut out the middleman.
I see what you did. Not bad. Good, Eric.
Wow. Sorry, Paul.
He's rarely funny. That was kind of humorous.
Thunder. Yeah, it was okay.
Now I can see why he was such a stunning success as a stand-up.
You know, when he was trying to be Jerry Springer?
Just make your point, fat man.
Come on. We don't want to peter out like we always do when Fred hosts.
What the hell was that?
We want to finish strong. Run through the line, Paul. Pick a point 5 yards past the line and run through it.
I don't see Bruschi making too many magical plays.
Why? That's why they'd be magical, because you don't see them coming.
I haven't seen one since 2004.
Ooh.
Shot across the body.
I haven't seen a truly impact play that he's made since he came back from his stroke.
Hello, sirs. Just wondering what you guys think about the Pats playing a game at Fenway Park someday.
They've done that already.
Would it even be
good,
possible?
Eric.
Just daydreaming, I guess. Take care and keep up the good work. That's from David, sent via his Verizon Wireless BlackBerry.
I cannot see that on account of it prevents 20,000 plus fans from seeing it.
How about a preseason game?
I don't
just
see
as a gimmick.
Same. It's the same thing.
The hockey thing is cool because you don't see hockey outside.
And you're opening up to
more people. But don't tell me that it wouldn't be cool to see a Patriots game on the new Fenway Park with the Green Monster and all. I mean, that whole shtick.
I think it would.
The shtick would be cool.
But it holds 38,000 people as opposed to 68,000 people.
Details.
I mean, it's 20 or 30,000 people that you're going to lose out on.
And I'm wondering,
you don't think that's
just
significant?
You know, that's a tight squeeze to get a football field in there.
No, they did it before.
I know done it before, but it's kind of a tight squeeze. It's not really the most. I mean, did you see when they announced that Army, Navy, and a few other games are going to be played at the new Yankee Stadium?
Yes.
The football field doesn't fit. The end zone, part of it has to go into the dugout, so they have to rethink how they're going to do that. They can't fit a football field in there.
Should have done that before they announced that the games were going to be there.
No. Yeah, exactly.
I'm not so much worried about the configuration of the field because I know that that works, but I just can't see the Kraft family wanting to sacrifice potential revenue, and you would.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially, they sell out preseason games here. It's not like it's, you know, some places where you can't get 38,000 to
Yeah, where was that where I saw they had to buy all the tickets so it wouldn't be blacked out? Chicago, Detroit? Well,
supposedly Jacksonville is facing the prospect of having every one of their home games blacked out.
But this was like a real team. I don't consider them. They've struggled with all kinds of covering seats, changing their capacity. I forgot which one. Anyway, Joe from Burlington, Iowa.
I thought I was just talking about NFL teams. Andy's talking about the real teams. Now I see.
That's not a real stadium. It's not a real team.
Gator Bowl.
After being impressed with Julian Edelman in the first two preseason games and listening to you guys say he's very likely to make the team, he is, I got to thinking about how many quarterbacks will be on the final 53-man roster. With roster spots so valuable, especially on defense, will the Patriots keep only two quarterbacks?
No.
If we assume Brian Hoyer will be on the practice squad,
yes,
and Kevin O'Connell solidifies his position as Tom's backup, does Andrew Walter get cut and Edelman becomes the emergency quarterback?
No.
Yeah. Yes, I realize putting Edelman under center
There's no way Edelman's going to be the emergency quarterback. It's possible that they only keep two quarterbacks, but forget about Edelman as a quarterback.
Well, I think he'll be the emergency quarterback.
I mean, if everybody's dead, they need someone to take
Kevin Fockrell. I think it will be him.
I'm not even sure it would be.
Oh, I do.
I'm not sure it would be.
Well, you're wrong. I realize putting Edelman under center is a dire situation, but at that point, you're already up against it. Keeping an extra linebacker or defensive lineman would be worth it over the course of the season. If this was an over-under game, I'd say there is a 20% chance this happens. What do you think?
In terms of the two quarterbacks, I would say you're right, 20% chance. In terms of Edelman being part of the equation, I think it's less than 5%.
I'd say it's under 20 for both scenarios.
A rare admission from TG and NJ. He says, sorry, I effed up about the number 23 thing.
22.
I just effed up. We are all effing up today. Will Jerry have to raise the scoreboard is his question.
Supposedly, you guys are telling me that he has the ability to do
it's
that.
What I read, they can raise it 20 to 25 feet pretty easily.
I just don't think.
So raise it.
We talked about this off the air. It hasn't come up on the show.
Just did.
I just think I think Jerry Jones is a laughingstock in a lot of things, but I really think this is unfair for him. He built a stadium by NFL standards. There's a minimum height of what is it, 90 feet? What was it?
I think it's 85, and he beat it by 5.
85, and he beat it by 5. It's higher than it needs to be by NFL regulations. And he's being laughed at and mocked and ridiculed because he has this billion-dollar stadium that, you know, has an obvious design flaw already. Well, the NFL should have thought about that.
Well, I think
and made it higher if it was that easy to hit.
I think it's even more telling that he was looking forward when he made the capability to raise the thing, even though he did put it 5 feet higher, like you said.
Yeah.
Because now he's going to have to do that.
Now, Andy said that he made some really foolish comments, Jones, I'm
I think he
about,
did, yeah.
In terms of, well, they were trying to hit it and all that
trying to
stuff,
make me look bad. Or
trying to make me look bad. That's stupid. But I think that the criticism that he's been under is a little bit unfair. I think that it's not unlike if you built a new stadium and my field's 100 yards and all of a sudden they said, well, it doesn't fit. Well, you told me it had to be 100 yards. I built it by regulations, and now you're saying it's not right.
Right.
You know, it's really no different.
You guys have been to the Superdome. I haven't. There's a scoreboard in the middle of the field there, isn't there?
Mm-hmm.
And isn't that where
It's very high.
It's very high, but people used to, when Ray Guy was playing, they used to say he would come close to hitting that sometimes when they played in the Superdome.
I could see that being possible.
So the Cowboys one is higher than that then, it sounds like.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know how high the one in New Orleans is, but I
well, part of the issue is the Cowboys one goes whatever it is 50 yards, so it's covering the one in the Superdome is in the middle of the field. This right. one is like
covers half the field,
a third, or
you can literally
a half
be punting
yeah.
from any spot on the field and have to be in play.
Right.
I asked Chris Hansen about that today, by the way, and he kind of laughed about it and said, I asked him, I said, do you know how high you kick the ball? Generally, I mean, a punter's aware of that, and he said no.
If they put the scoreboard over the stands, Chris Hansen will be in trouble.
Wow.
When he shanked
it. That was a bad shot. Bad shot.
Hope he doesn't listen.
That's a good way to end it.
That's going to do it. Another successful PFW in progress. We don't need no stinking Fred Kirsch to have a great show because we have the great Eric Scalavino with Practice Fields Updates. We have the great Paul Perillo, who's been working the locker room like never before. Stories from Sean Crable and Chris Hansen, just to name a few.
And those are the only ones you can name.
And we have me hacking up the emails, but doing
a
great job
with
the ratings.
Bubba Ventrone yesterday.
Oh, and Paul had a Bubba Ventrone story. He'll slip that in on Thursday when we may or not or may not have a full show. It could be the first ever Fred
Solo?
Kirsch solo show. Depends, but you will have to tune in at noon on Thursday, Patriots.com radio, to find out whether it'll be a superstar, star-studded broadcast or a Kirsch words here. Debacle. Until then, peace out.
BFW in progress. These guys rock.
You're damn right they do.
Patriots.com radio.